Thanks for listening to WRIF Online. The live web stream will begin in 15 seconds.
This is Matt Demmer of Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury here to tell you about the exciting new Lincoln Mercury lineup. With the all-new Lincoln MKX, available all-wheel drive MKZ, or the newly designed Lincoln Navigator or Mercury Mariner, we have something for everyone. Stop in and see today. Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury on Michigan Avenue in Dearborn.
To the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and looking forward all week to talk to all of you out there. Jalene Jordan is with me. Hi, Jalene.
Hi. I have been looking forward to it as well.
You know, that's the kind of BS that that people in media always say. But, I mean, we really mean this.
We do.
We really look forward to this show. I love to do it. And whenever there's a holiday, we don't get to do it. And we are actually disappointed.
Yes. That's a real rarity in the working world, isn't it?
Well, we only do it once a week. I would say if we were doing five shows a week.
Which we've done.
Yeah. Yeah, we have done that together. And, I mean, I know when I've been on, like, a vacation and 5 days off, I'm going, oh, no, if I was on the air, I'd
be talking about this. Yeah. Well, we're here, and we have plenty to cover tonight.
Yes, indeed. But let's talk about our personal lives.
Okay. Let's get personal.
Just in terms of the cultural events we took in this week.
Yeah.
You were at a pretty wild affair.
Well, why don't you talk about yours first?
Well, okay, you're right. You start with the with the weaker stuff first.
I don't know, whatever you want to call it now, Peter.
Although this was wonderful. It was the now don't turn off when I say this first word, okay? Don't turn off when I say this first word, because the first word is ballet, right?
But ballet's beautiful. I was a ballerina.
You were?
Of course I was.
You're a little
kid. I could show you some moves during the commercials.
Okay.
Yes, like, you know. Ballet.
Plié.
Plié, yes.
Yeah, that's the only one I know. It was the Ballet Folklorico de Mexico.
Fabulous.
So it was a celebration of Mexican Independence Day, and it was this huge festival down at the Opera House. Don't turn off. You say that to the Riff.
This is the Riff.
You were saying ballet and opera.
Riff rocks. Come on now.
Yeah, Riff rocks. but this thing was so rocking. They were essentially these Mexican folk dances that were done by 32 dancers, 16 men, 16 women. They were so over the top. I just can't even begin to tell you. And an 11-piece mariachi band.
Ooh, I love all of that. I bet it was just fantastic.
It was. And when we got to the opera house, the mariachi were on the stairway going up to the second floor.
Welcoming you.
Playing all these songs. Mm-hmm. And it was great. And rather than a staid and, you know, guy, I love them, opera audience.
Uh-huh.
I would say that probably, 60-70%, three-quarters of the people were Mexican-Americans.
Uh-huh.
So they were just really responding.
Sure.
And they always say, you know, no photographs, and but it looked like a photo shoot.
Well, we all have camera phones now.
Yeah.
And the event I was at this weekend, no camera kind of thing, but
One thing that occurred to me, because so it was a good cultural event,
mm-hmm.
and it was good to celebrate with these people, and I was thinking a couple of things. First off, how people like me, just sort of an American mongrel, no culture. I mean, our culture now
is television. Oh, which I have to say, Peter, I'm on a new kick of really cutting back on television. You know how years back I told you, I watched too much. I quit for like a year. I quit watching television completely. Well, then I got back deep in it. And I'm back. I'm back out. I'm out.
Well, remember.
So thank you for saying that.
People always say that television is mindless entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that's what it's good for.
Exactly.
Because you want to just chill and look at some movie, or you want to watch sports and root for the Tigers.
Sure.
Or something like that. That's
Lions, who won.
Yes, they did. Yeah. Overtime, quite a game. Mm-hmm. And, but, maybe threw me off with
TV, television, why it's
television.
Bad.
No.
We're a culture of television.
Okay, well, I'll pick it up from there, because I was going too far afield anyway.
We never do that.
313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743.
So my
I'm still not done.
Okay, sorry. Are you still talking about this ballet?
So first off, here, white man in North America, no culture. You know, although as Monty Python says, culture, you know, they're doing Australian.
Yeah.
We got culture up to our a-holes, you know. But the thing that I thought was how reviled that Mexican Americans have become in this debate about immigration, for instance.
It's terribly sad.
Yeah.
It's just pathetic, really.
And this has happened all throughout American history. The Irish, when they came over in the 1840s in large numbers, they were reviled. I mean, I said that the other week with signs, no Irish need apply.
Right.
And at other times during our history, you know, Italians and German Chinese that were, I mean, there were anti-Chinese riots during the, I think during the 1870s and 80s. And then they had this, something called the Asian Exclusion Act, where they stopped the immigration into the United States of people from Asia. And
we go all the way back to the American Indians.
Yeah. And also, of course, you know, African Americans excluded from employment. And when they tried to integrate certain jobs, you know, there was riots and stuff like that. So let's not do this to another group of people. Now, I know most of you aren't, but some people, rather than really getting a focus on the core economic issues of what's driving this economy downward, Jalene sounds louder than you. I'm getting this. I know. She always takes the louder mic.
Oh, yeah. Here you go again. Yeah. Oh, now you're starting, Al. This is our producer. Hey, Al.
Yeah.
Sure.
So let's not do this to Hispanic people. Okay, let's try to solve the economic problems of our region and not see it as an ethnic
race
or whatever.
Take a pledge with Peter and Jalene right now. Stop the madness.
Right. But, okay, so I was at the Ballet Folklorico. Am I saying that?
Folklorico. Folklorico. Folklorico.
Folklorico.
Very good.
Folklorico.
You got it.
De Mexico. All right, so,
see
good. All right, so you were at something a little more risque.
Yeah, were you there last night?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, I was dressed. I was the guy that was hooded. I was in the bondage outfit.
You're giving it away.
I was being led in on a leash. That's why you couldn't tell it was me.
All right.
No, I was at the Folklorico.
Okay. Yeah, that was last night.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, so I was at a cultural event as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cultural and speaking.
Culture.
I was able to take my camera in because
tell people what it was.
I was representing the riff. It was the Detroit Erotica Ball.
Yeah.
Detroit Erotica Ball. Let me enunciate a little more. And I'd never been to one of these, and they've been going on for quite a while. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to go down. It was a riff event, and I brought Crud on the stage, you know, Vinny Dombrowski.
Wait a minute, folks, now.
That's a band.
Riff is WRIF for people listening across the world.
Yes, thank you.
And Crud is the name of a band. He says you brought Crud onto the stage.
Yeah, well, I was going to explain, but good. Sometimes we have to stop each other, don't we, Peter? I was bringing them on the stage and hanging out and all that good stuff. And I got to tell you, I have to give a local plug to Crud, and it's Danielle, and it's Dana Forrester and Vinny from Sponge and of the Orbitsons as well. What a show that was. They're amazing. Then there was a band before that called MTV TV.
Yeah.
And they're from London. And I can't go into not even one detail really about their show. But
there was some nudity there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So now most of you folks listen to this show because of its political content, the fact that we discuss
the body's political.
It is.
Come on. Everything's political when you think about it, Peter.
So, I know, it is. The personal is political.
Those
60s, man.
I love it.
But if you want to see some of these photos and
go ahead. Yeah, go to my MySpace.
Which is MySpace.com
/Julene Jordan Music. And you can get there by going to peterwerbe.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E. I saved you time there, Peter. I said it for you.
There you go.
Good time had by all.
If you want to talk to us, 313-298-WRIF and 313-298-9743.
Let's focus.
If you're bashful or the lines are busy, which they're not now, call talkyes@yahoo.com. You can send us an email. And, yeah, you can go to our MySpace page. Thank you.
MySpace.com/nightcall. Did I get y'all flustered over there?
No.
Okay.
No, although I'm looking at the photos.
There's something
I've
else.
I've seen that before.
There's going to be more later, too. When I get off the air, I'm going to throw more on them. I have a little bit of an obsession. It's just worth the view.
All right. Let's get to the non-personal political
stuff.
Now, there was a big, you wouldn't know it, probably, many of you didn't even hear, but there was a very large anti-war protest. Now, the whole week, of course, was the testimony of General Petraeus and Iraq ambassador to Iraq, Ryan Crocker, testifying that, it's problems, but things are going along swimmingly, essentially. I mean, they have, what's Bush's thing now? What for success? What's his little, he's got a new little shtick out.
How could I miss it?
Yeah, results from, I have it here somewhere, like results from success. I mean, it's really terrible. I mean, just another ad slogan while people are getting chewed up by the thousands. Iraqis, of course, an increased air war. That's going to be part of it. So more and more Iraqis are going to die. Up to 1 million Iraqis have now died. 4 million are both internal and external refugees, and this is the George Bush gift of democracy.
And let's talk about the money again. What was it? $750 million.
A day.
A day.
Yeah. And right now, for most of you know that live in the state of Michigan, those of you who don't, the state has to make some extraordinary budget cuts or increase taxes, which I'm absolutely opposed to raising any taxes, and I'm absolutely opposed to any budget cuts in social services. So I don't know. What are we
going to do?
Maybe we could ask George Bush to send Michigan maybe a couple of days of Iraq costs.
Hey, how about one? Yeah. How about just one?
Yeah. Well, I think it's $1.5 billion that of the deficit.
I know, but I'm saying a little bit.
Well, what the hell? I mean, come on, it's not his money. You would think, okay.
It's our money.
Yeah. So, and then Bush gave this speech. I mean, I can't even get my brain around trying to refute it. I mean, if people can believe George W. Bush, you know how many people now, I thought maybe there was a mistake in this. I read it in a couple sources. 5% of the population think Bush can successfully bring the war in Iraq.
5%. And one of those 5%, I think, saw the peace sign on the back of my car last night and keyed the entire side of it. Thank you for that. Thank you very much.
Well, the right wing is about violence, if you think about it. But and here's more of it. So there's this demonstration, which probably great numbers of you didn't even know that occurred because it doesn't get any real expression. And the reason that there are demonstrations like this is because it's the way that the citizenry express themselves. And somehow to the mainstream media, the MSM, this is not exactly a real legitimate way to express oneself. What you have to have is a suit and a little American flag pin on your lapel and you get to be on television.
And a lot of money. And this, by the way, this protest was yesterday. And this is a protest that you and I, Peter, talked about going. We talked about going to every single one.
Yeah, right.
We did talk about this one, so.
Well, what was extraordinarily disturbing about it, there was 100,000 people, according to Answer, the group that that sponsored it. And then they had 100,000. And then in this line from the Yahoo account from Associated Press says about 13 blocks away, nearly 1,000 counter protesters gathered near the Washington Monument, frequently erupting into chants of USA, USA, and waving American flags. That's okay. Except, let me see now. There is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 paragraphs in this story, which is titled Protesters Gathered to March on Capitol. There's 6 paragraphs for the 1,000 pro-war, pro-Bush, that represents like 5% of the people.
Right.
And 4 paragraphs at the beginning for these 100,000 people. Now, there's 100,000 anti-war marchers, 1,000 pro-war marchers, including a retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Robert Buzz Patterson. And, I mean, you know, I write news articles. I've edited newspapers. I still edit newspapers. And I know about placement. I know about selection of material you get. I mean, this thing could have been written in a manner that never even mentioned these counter-demonstrators. There's 1,000 people at this pro-war demonstrator demonstration down the way. Probably, there were more people in the Portageon lines at the anti-war demonstrations than here, except they get all this. You know, they should get a throwaway line. It's 100-1.
Yeah, kind of like as we are the throwaway in the mainstream media every time we go and march at these. I go every time I do a march in Washington. The next morning I go and I buy the Post to see where...
Washington.
Yeah. So the last one that I went to in March, remember when I was there, Peter? I go to get the Post. There was nothing, not one thing. And when I was there, I thought this was the biggest thing going on in that city in D.C. that, you know, the day before. Mm-hmm. It was very, very disheartening.
How about this? If you read only Associated Press, and it begins, thousands of protesters gathered Saturday outside the White House to demand an end to the Iraq War. Thousands of protesters, I would think that would be under 10,000.
Right. It says several thousand. So I would say, in my account here, yeah. So I would say 3,000 plus.
Yeah. 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000.
When there were 100,000.
Yeah.
It's now, bad writing. You're right, Peter.
Or intentionally misleading.
Yeah.
What
do we call that? Misfeasance? Malfeasance?
Both.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Peter and Jelena, 313-298-WRIF. Now, the CBS account says this is much better. On one hand, tens of thousands of anti-war demonstrators marched through downtown Washington on Saturday, clashing with police at the foot of Capitol steps where more than 190 protesters were arrested. Well, one of the things, whenever you see that verb, clashing, it mm-hmm. almost always means the cops kick the crap out of people.
Oh, they pepper spray them. Wait, I just saw the word. Remember, we have it's the difference between misinformation and disinformation.
Let me see.
I spoke before I thought
right.
before.
Well, it's both. I don't know.
No, remember, misinformation is when...
Mistake.
Is a mistake. Disinformation is when you mean it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think it's disinformation.
Okay.
But get the headline on this CBS News account. War of anti-war, pro-war protesters.
Can you say that again?
War of anti-war, pro-war protesters. So, and again, they don't give quite as much space to these 1,000 counter-protesters, but it's absolutely extraordinary. But you know what? I don't want to whine about being misrepresented by the MSM. The
mainstream media.
Yeah. I want to get to the point where we can just say MSM, but
well,
I agree
it'll
with
take
you.
A while.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Saying. Political movements since the beginning of this country, going back to the late 1790s into the abolitionist movement in the 1830s and 40s and 50s, the labor movement that began in the 1880s and the 1890s that then had a resurgence at the beginning of the 20th century, they all knew that the corporate press would not present their side of things and that they had to create their own. And they didn't say, oh, you know, like in the 1890s, oh, the Hearst papers are lying about us, which they did. They lied about every single thing that the labor movement and then into the 20th century, the radical movements, the socialist movements, the anarchist movement represented. So there were hundreds and hundreds of newspapers that carried the message of this incredible, huge movement. It was essentially wiped out by World War I, which, by the way, was one of the purposes of World War I, to end the radical thrust, the contest to corporate capitalism in this country in Western Europe. But that's way far afield.
Stop right there.
1930s, same thing. They had to be, there was this incredibly vibrant labor and radical press. 1960s, same thing. The mainstream media, the MSM, lied about the war in Vietnam, lied about the protesters, misrepresentative, reduced the number of people protesting just like it's here by 90%. So there was a so-called underground press movement. And I would just like to think, I hope that, I'm still 20th century, so I'm still kind of like stuck on print as an alternative media.
Well, you're also in it. You also help run
yeah.
a newspaper.
Yeah.
So,
but hopefully the internet is now that alternative media.
Right, because there's
media.
So much
yeah.
out there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you know what? I should say, you know, maybe we don't often say this enough, but at peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E.com, you can go to, what is the name of the section where you have just the links section? It takes you to all kinds of other websites.
Stuff. Yeah, lots of stuff.
Be there. You can. I think you could really spend days on your website, Peter.
Well, I know. It's a labyrinth. Now, one of the things about this demonstration, the idea of it, it would be nice if it was presented fully, if it allowed the spokespeople that that were the speakers at the rally, the quote from them, and had really decent coverage as representative of the vast majority of us who oppose Bush, who, I mean, he was nothing but ridiculed on the Emmys tonight. But let's not get out. I'm all right.
That's later.
That's later.
That's
right.
For the other entertainment portion of the program.
but they don't do it, so we shouldn't expect it. And really what's important is the grassroots movement that bring 100,000 people to Washington. Now, when things are in New York City, if there's a million people like there was on February 15th, 2003, when I was there, there was a million people protesting the
Republican National Convention.
No, this was the coming of the war. And probably 800,000 of them were from the New York area. Or, you know, New York, Connecticut, right around there. So there's a built-in base there. But in Washington, it's not true. So these are essentially probably 90,000 people that came from
elsewhere.
Yeah,
right.
From elsewhere.
Right.
So we missed the one on September 15th, and we're probably going to miss the one on September 29th.
I'm afraid so. Yeah. I'm afraid so. Buckling down. Got to stick around.
But I would urge, I'm not buckling down. I'm just not going to be able to go.
Yeah. But Go ahead.
But there's another big demonstration, September 29th, Saturday, September 29th. You can either drive there. If you haven't gone, if you've heard Jillian and I before, we always say just how vibrant and how...
It's life-changing completely.
Well, not every time. You don't want your life to change every time you go there.
Well, but... Right, true. I'm being so literal.
Yeah.
But it's just a real affirmation and to be around all of those like-minded people. We can hang out in a room at a peace group or, go host a movie. But when you have that number of people, 100,000 people and every walk of life and all the different signs and all of the different political theater that goes with it and the music, it's just really a mind-blowing experience that everyone, if you are with us, right, and you're against this war, you really should try to do it. You can take buses. I'm on a roll here. You can take buses that are cheap, and you can get there on a Saturday morning, leave on a Friday night, and then you'll come home, and you'll be home on Sunday.
Yeah, you can go. You can go to my website, Peter Werbe. Boy, we're really kicking.
We're hammering it tonight.
WERBE.com. Go to the calendar page, and you'll see all this. And you can see where you can get buses that go from Detroit.
Yes.
Yeah. And
do it.
Yeah.
Or surrounding areas. I think Ann Arbor probably always has.
Sure. And let me see. There's going to be they're going to have a whole week of events, September 22nd to the 29th. They're going to have a week-long encampment directly in front of Congress. They're going to have a giant billboard and round-the-clock political challenge to Congress to stop funding the war. Actions every day and resistance music and culture every evening. Man, I want to
go. So sad we can't go. Mm.
You know, Sadly enough,
there's going to be another one.
Yeah, that's right, that there is. Because how many Americans were killed today? How many, probably, if there is 10 Americans killed this week, there's probably 1,000 Iraqis.
Do you still have the tally on your website?
I still have the tally. You can go to... No, you got it by now.
Go to the website.
Yeah, talk about gallows humor. It is just so incredible. By the way, Alan Greenspan, who was the chair of the Federal Reserve System for 18 years, a Republican, a dyed-in-the-wool Republican, has shaken the White House by declaring that the prime motive for the war in Iraq was oil.
Yeah. I heard that in my sleep watching CNN again.
Thought you weren't watching television.
Well, I fall asleep sometimes to CNN. I have it on a timer. Yeah. It puts me right to sleep.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Oh, yeah. Greenspan, 81 years old, is understood to believe that Saddam Hussein posed a threat to the security of oil supplies in the Middle East. Now, that's it. Britain and America have always insisted the war had nothing to do with oil. Bush said the aim was to disarm Iraq of weapons of mass destruction and end Saddam's support for terrorism. Well, since neither of those were true, although 40% of Republicans think that
there were weapons of mass destruction.
No, that,
right?
worse, that they think that Saddam Hussein had direct connection with 9/11.
Oh, still?
Yeah, they're
doing these.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to name call tonight, but because that was a really bad one. It was right in my head.
And what's his name? Defense Secretary Gates. He said, this isn't true. He didn't know exactly what the decision-making process was when the United States went to war, but he was sure it wasn't really for oil.
Blah, blah.
Are there really people out there that don't understand this was for oil?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, Peter.
Yeah.
We're here to try to change as many people as we can in their minds if they think that way.
Okay. Let's take a call here. Anyway.
Yeah, how about the phone numbers? We haven't given those enough.
313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743. Give us a call.
Let's take our first caller, and it's Andrew from Fowlerville. Andrew, hi. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
How's it going? I had a question. What are your views on the latest scandals with Congress? Like the stuff about like homosexuality, the congressman saying he's not a homosexual, yet he committed a gay act.
I think it's okay, first of all, it's horribly, I'll just answer the first part, okay?
Yeah.
The general question. It's horribly sad that this man has to allegedly resort to finding someone in a bathroom. It's horribly sad that anyone who is gay has to remain closeted because of the bigotry of a lot of the population in this country. And it's horribly sad that for his situation. But the one thing is that we always talk about is that it's always now the Republicans.
Yeah.
And they're the ones who are completely so against gay marriage or any kind of civil union or any kind of...
Or just against gays that make
right.
that create the climate of which I mean he climbed
of hatred.
Yeah, he climbed on his own scaffold.
Yes.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
did. And so more than anything the hypocrisy of this man in that he was this moral, moral majority kind of guy and up on his pedestal speaking out against homosexuals yet he allegedly made this act. That's not only sad, it's hypocritical.
Yeah, and Andrew, he didn't commit, in fact, what his lawyer said, that if he did everything the cops said that he did...
He was entrapped.
What's the crime? You tap somebody's toe.
It's a culture. It's a culture of bathroom sex.
Yeah, yeah.
Get over it.
Yeah. All right, Andrew.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you very much. All right, how about this? When tourists ask for the bathroom in the Minneapolis airport lately, it's usually not because they have to go.
This is good.
It's because they want to see the stall made famous by U.S. Senator Larry, I take a wide stance, it's arrest and a sex thing.
It's become a landmark,
yeah,
Peter.
Yeah. Karen Evans, information specialist at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, said it's become a tourist attraction.
Yeah.
People are taking pictures. Craig was arrested June 11th by a Minneapolis airport police officer, blah, blah, blah. He pled guilty. Craig said his guilty plea was a mistake.
You know, you're supposed to say pleaded guilty. Do you know that?
Can we move on?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I learned that in journalism school.
Just 15 minutes into her shift on Friday, Evans said she had been asked directions to the new tourist attraction four times. Other airport workers field the same question. Newsstand worker Abdullah Saeed added he gets the question daily. It's by the lottery shop, right next to the shoeshine shop. The Royal Zeno Shoeshine Shop owner's grandson, Royal Zeno, that's his name, said it had been hectic. People have been going inside, taking pictures of the stall, taking pictures outside the bathroom door. Man, it's been crazy, he said.
I bet his business has never been so good in the airport. He's like, amen, thank you, Congressman, and your wide stance.
Yeah, if you wanna, do a little toe tapping, you better have your shoes shine.
I've been to that airport before, too.
Yeah, so have I.
Yeah.
I'm never going in a public bathroom again, though, I'm telling you. There might be some cop there.
That's true.
John and Sally Westby of Minneapolis was on their way to Guatemala. We just had to stop and check out the bathroom, Sally said. In fact, it's John's second time. He was here last week already. What is she doing, standing outside?
These people kind of need to get a life.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Should we read this? I hope this is
Peter.
Is it okay? This is from Blueberry Pickin. She writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. The subject line is, the scent of man-ass drives Republican mad. I tell you, mad. They completely lose their minds in the men's room. What?
No. No, I don't want to you do that to me.
Okay.
We almost did a commercial break.
No, I think
no, look, we
I'm almost I'm going to shut off your mic. There.
That's bad.
All right.
That's
bad. Mad, I tell you. They are. And who is going to be the next Republican to be outed? I mean, that's the thing. If somebody outed me, everybody would go, yeah, so what? You know, I'd say, yeah, right. What's it to you?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay? Yeah. I mean, never mind. I don't want to go.
Okay.
All right. Here's Matthew in East China, Michigan. Wow. Where is East China, Michigan, Matthew?
You're I'll tell you where it is. I'll tell you exactly where it is.
Where?
By St. Clair.
Is that right, Matthew?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay, go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate your time.
Sure.
In regards to the print medium, a co-worker and I both live nearby each other, and we write letters to the editor to the local paper. This last week, in the anniversary of 9/11, I was reading letters to the editor, and here's the letter from my coworker, who happens to be very right-wing and rather pro-Bush.
Sorry.
I write the opposite opinion. Not one of my letters has ever made it to the pages of the paper.
Go figure. You radical.
Well, I approach my coworker, who I actually respect in his profession, and talked to him about the article, and he told me he wrote that article nearly a year ago.
Wow.
And they suddenly pulled it out. He couldn't believe it made the paper. He had wrote it so long ago, he forgot about it.
Well, Matthew, I was actually going to bring, and didn't. There's also these groups like Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting have done this analysis of what op-ed pieces, the politics of the op-ed pieces that get printed, the opinion pieces that get printed in the daily press. And big surprise, they're overwhelmingly right-wing, even though we're at a point where the Republicans have been kicked to the curb, which is good, and Bush has been kicked to the curb, good, and the majority of people, vast majority of people in this country want the United States to get out of Iraq, and still, you would think this was 4 years ago and Bush's popularity was, like 80% or something like that.
Hey, Matthew, real quick question. Since it was a year ago, does your right-wing friend, coworker, still feel the same way as when he wrote that a year ago?
No. Oddly enough, his father is a retired FBI agent and was teaching overseas as a contractor. And since his father's returned and they've had many conversations, his opinion has changed dramatically.
Okay, well, you need to tell him from Peter and I that he needs to write another letter. And seriously, if you could get him to do that, that would be very powerful.
You know, one other thing, Matthew, and you just, we're going to have an incredible guest on later today. Let me see. It starts at 1 a.m., and it's Anne Wright, who's a former State Department diplomat, and she did almost 30 years in the Army as a colonel. And she's going to be talking about the congressional testimony this last week of General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker. And one of the things that she reminded us of, because you said about a contractor, that there is almost 130,000 private contractors that the military has hired.
And how many military members are over there now, Peter?
What is it up to, like 180 or something?
Okay,
like
so
that?
It's almost even?
Yeah, or maybe 160. So there's almost 300,000 troops. There's been 1,000 contractors killed.
Oh.
Okay, hey, we got to go take a break, so thank you very much. Appreciate your call. We'll be right back. You want to call in the meantime, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
Peter and Jelaine.
Weekday night at 10 with Meltdown. It's like getting hit in the head by a 2x4 with a nail in it. Mandatory Metallica. Now, it's your triple play of the mighty Metallica with a big unit every weekday night at 10, exclusively from your one and only Metallica station. 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
In the time of chimpanzees, I was a monkey. Mutated my veins and mouth. I kept the chunky with the plastic eyeballs. Spray paint the vegetables, dog food skulls with the beefcake pantyhose. Kill the headlights and put it in neutral. Stock car flaming with the loser and the cruise control. Babies in Reno with the vitamin D.
One's got a weasel and other's got a flag. One's on the pole, shove the other in a bag. With the rerun shows and the cocaine doja, the daytime crap of the folk singer's club. He hung himself with a guitar string, a slab of turkey neck, and it's hanging from a pigeon wing. If you can't write, if you can't relate, trade the cash for the beat, for the body, for the hate. And my time is a piece of wax falling on a termite, it's choking on the splinters.
More Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Man, I want to go to the Voodoo Music Festival in New Orleans. Joining me, Jalene Jordan, 313-298-WRIF.
I'd like to go, too. It's 313-298-9743.
Yeah, I'm never going to memorize that if I keep letting you do that.
You don't need to. I'm here for you.
Most of you on the line want to talk about what we were just talking about, the Iraq War.
Which part? Okay,
yeah,
Iraq.
Yeah, right. Not erotica, as we were talking about also. But I want to just bring up this one thing because we get lost in it. I mean, ultimately, it's all about the bucks. I mean, the war in Iraq is about money. I mean, you would say it's a war for oil. Well, it's a war for oil money. These guys want to get as much money as possible. They want to be able to control the resources so they keep getting the wealth. Not for us. I mean, maybe a few of us share in it a little, but ultimately it's for the elite.
For themselves and their cronies.
Yeah, and they don't care how many Iraqis die. They certainly don't care how many Iraqis die. They don't even count them.
Nah.
Now
they ignore it. In fact, they're in such denial they can't even deal with it.
Yeah, what did Bush say? 30,000. The L.A. Times the other day said it was 1 million Iraqis have died.
So, you know what? Not only is he discounting the people who he believes are dead, he's discounting the dead that he doesn't even believe are dead.
Right.
Ugh, God, it's so maddening.
Well, we are facing, as anybody listening in the WRIF immediate audience knows, and some of you may know from around the country and around the world, that there's tough times here in Detroit, particularly with the auto industry, particularly with the state of Michigan that's having this terrible budget crunch. And now Delphi Corporation was one of these companies that went into bankruptcy that, you know, let me just say, it's an auto supplier. I don't want to go into its whole history. Most of you know what it is. Delphi Corporation is going to seek court approval because it's in Chapter 11? Bankruptcy. I think that's the one it's in. It's going to pay its top 400 executives between $20 million and $37 million in bonuses throughout the end of the year.
Wow.
So this is the ninth month. So the next 3 months, they're going to give out somewhere between $20 and $37 million in bonuses. And this is a company that's talking about cutting its union workers' wages in half. This is what I'm saying. You know, if we're not talking about general strike and revolution and radical change, we might as well thatch our roofs and just admit we're peasants.
Just sit down and wallow and shrivel up if you don't care about that. You know, that's the only alternative.
This is the fourth request. The court keeps saying it's okay, and they said the bonuses are necessary to keep competitive to remain competitive and retain key white-collar personnel. Well, I got to tell you, you don't have to give me millions. I'll come to work for you. Just give me like $125,000.
Yeah, give me six figures, man.
Yeah. Jillian and I, for quarter mil, will help.
Oh, come on.
Could you do any worse than the guys that are there? They drove the damn company into bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And they're getting
rewarded.
Of course, it's the average Joe and Jane that gets screwed.
Always.
The filing covers the period between July 1 and the 31st. Delphi has already awarded more than $60 million in bonuses to executives since entering bankruptcy. What are some of those?
It's just a head shaker.
There's this one liberal talk show host that all he ever says is, unbelievable, unbelievable.
You know, I think I say that a lot as well. Because it is.
Well, I think it's the opposite.
It's completely believable?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think what they're saying is that he's trying, you know what he's trying to say.
Well, I know.
He's just saying that this is so wrong. This is so wrong. But that's his word.
Well, it's so patterned. But here, this is a release from the Institute for Policy Studies and our friends at United for a Fair Economy.
UFE.org.
Yeah. Right. CEO worker pay gap. That means what's the differences between the pay of the big shots and us's. CEOs of large U.S. companies last year averaged $10.8 million in total compensation. That's about 364 times the pay of the average U.S. worker. The top 20 private equity and hedge fund managers, and you know, someone the other day, and I don't want to get into this too much, but said, what's an equity fund? What's a hedge fund?
Mm-hmm.
And, some of you are going to think I don't really know. That's why I'm not going to answer the question. But let's go on.
You do know.
It's speculators. It's people manipulating the stock market in order to make money out of nothing. And they do, and they get very rich. And what they pocketed an average $657 million. How could this be? All 20 of them.
Okay.
That's 22,000 times the pay of an average U.S. worker. Workers on the bottom rung of the economy have just received their first federal minimum wage increase in a decade, but in the inflation-adjusted value of the new minimum, despite the hike, stands 7% below the minimum wage level of a year ago. So this is really a case, folks, of the rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, and there's a relationship. And when you see all those foreclosure signs, mm-hmm. when you the incredible increase in personal bankruptcies and all that, there's wealth being created in this country, and it's not being, well, let me put it this way, it's being taken by the elite. CEOs at major U.S. corporations enjoyed, on average, a $1.3 million in pension gain. In other words, this is, in 1 year, their pension portfolio went up $1.3 million.
And in other words, Peter, as you said, well, you know, everyone else is suffering. And anyone I know, then you know, and probably the majority of the listening audience here right now on this radio station or around the world or around the country are suffering. And all we have in our heads are how bad things are.
Yeah, they're doing fine.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. 60% of American households, led by a 45 to 50-year-old, even had a retirement account. So 40% of people didn't. But between 2001 and 2004, the retirement accounts of those households gained an average of $3,700 a year. So
wow.
So you and me, we got an average of $3,700. They got $1.3 million. And it goes on and on.
It's pretty blaring, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, the 20 highest paid European corporate managers made an average of $12.5 million, only about a third as much as the 20 highest earning U.S. executive took home last year, which I actually thought, and the top 20 European execs led companies that generated $19 billion more in sales revenue than the corporations led by their higher paid American counterparts.
I wonder how many of them have trophy wives. What do you want to bet?
All the best money can buy.
or they had their wives had a plastic surgery so they could become young again.
Right. The nation, according to the Quakers,
very peaceful.
The American Friends Service Committee. Well, God, what do you expect of them? Mm-hmm. You know, they're peaceniks. They say the nation should spend $720 million a day on ending poverty, not on Iraq war.
Wow, how radical of them.
Yeah, U.S. world productivity led by working more so that our lead in productivity keeps going up, but it means we are working more and more.
Yeah, I work more than I ever have.
I guess I've been working a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked about Hugo Chavez, the president of Venezuela. He has proposed a constitutional change in their country on Wednesday to reduce Venezuela's maximum workday to 6 hours as part of the broader legal changes to advances.
That crazy socialism!
Yeah, his self-styled socialist revolution.
Self-styled. I have to tell you something. I was listening to an interview with Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine. And also,
he's going to be playing at the Voodoo Festival in New Orleans.
Yes, and he, if anyone is not aware, has a band, which is him, called The Night Watchmen. Right. I heard an interview with him tonight, and they played one of his songs, and he mentions Hugo Chavez in there, and I thought, oh, you are just so rad, Tom Morello. You know, I've always loved him, and I love him more. And he is one interesting person. So I would highly suggest everyone checks that out. In fact, I need to make him a friend on our MySpace.
Sure.
I'm going to invite
him.
Let's
go to the Voodoo Festival in New Orleans.
Let's do it. Do you think the Doc Rock will send us?
Doc, are you listening? That's our program director, Doug Podell, with 10 a.m. till 10 p.m.
Please? We've been really good.
Yeah. Is somebody from the station going to go?
I don't know. I think it should be us.
Oh, I think it would really rock if we went. Come on, Doug.
Come on.
Come on. Fix us up.
Right. We'll behave. I promise.
Here's Joe in Detroit. Joe, thanks for calling 313-298 WRIF, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing excellent.
Hey, I just want to make a point out here. You know, the weapons of mass destruction deal wasn't just the Bush administration. Clinton tried to make a strong argument for that back in the late 90s.
They were all chattering about that, but Clinton never was trying to lead
never bombed the country like that.
He was bombing the country.
He went over there three times or something like that.
They were bombing since, I don't know, like 1992.
But what I'm saying is he didn't do the complete
the shock and awe.
Shock and awe. I'm getting at.
He didn't bomb Iraq back to the Stone Age. Clinton and Gore acted reprehensibly during the 1990s.
And it's pretty rare for us to fully support those guys anyway for what they did, right?
Yeah.
Well, you support Hillary, don't you?
Wait. What makes you think that?
I don't know. I'm just assuming, you know, your political...
No, seriously, what makes you think that? Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to either one of you two. I'm just wondering...
You talking to me?
Who do you support in the next election?
Haven't decided yet.
Oh, I have. Dennis Kucinich.
Well, of course Dennis
Kucinich.
I'd like
to see Dennis
Kucinich. But, you know, I have to vote for the one that's going to win, because we have to get these idiots out of the presidency.
I'd like to see. I was actually thinking, you know, in Michigan, you may know, Joe, that you can vote for, I could go vote for either party. So I was thinking about voting for Ron Paul, because I'd really like to screw the Republicans. Although, you know, if that Republican got in, that would be a whole thing.
Peter Worby, if you do that, I am coming over to your house and strangling you.
Yeah, I don't know.
No.
What if I don't vote? What if I, you know. I don't mean, so if that's what it should be, Ron Paul versus Dennis Kucinich. What do you think about that, Joe?
Hey, you know, my opinion on this is, you know, if your beliefs are to the left, that's fine, but I believe a lot of your politicians on the left are hypocrites.
Well, of course they are.
Politicians.
All of them are. Isn't
they are.
That's like a, synonymous. Hello?
Hello?
We're with you.
On the other hand, Joe, I'll tell you, any time that I've ever voted for a Democrat for president, which hasn't, maybe I only did it once. Yeah, I think the only
you
time.
You only did it once.
Yeah, I only did it once. The only guy I ever voted for was Kerry, and I virtually had to hold my nose.
Yeah, I know that was hard for you.
Yeah, and if it turns out to be Hillary versus Rudy, that whack job lying.
Yeah, I think we'll vote for Hillary.
The only thing that Rudy has going for him, as far as I'm concerned,
is his ability to cross-dress.
He is
an amazing-looking woman.
Yeah, you ever seen him dressed as a woman, Joe?
No, I don't want to.
All you got to do is go. All you got to do is go to the Google, as Bush said.
Yeah, no, he's great.
Check it out.
All right, thank you very much.
Fabulous. Fabulous in the falsies.
Why was he doing that?
He does it for these charity events or something like that. I don't know. It started, he did one, and then it's just become kind of a, thing where he's requested to do it. He's done it what, three times now.
But Giuliani, he also...
I think he truly enjoys it. I think he has a trunk at the end of the bed full of the stuff.
But he also, didn't he live with gay guys? Wasn't there
When he was separated from his first wife, I think his first wife.
Who knows? He's got so many.
I don't know. The last wife before this one, Judy or whatever her name is. Yeah, he was living with a couple of gay guys, but so what?
Well, I was going to say...
What's your point, Mr. Orby?
Well, I was going to say, I don't care whether people cross-dress.
I don't either.
You know, I cross-dress sometimes.
You do? What do you wear?
Well, I wear Marilyn's old T-shirts like this one.
It's not, okay.
She wears
that
them.
That doesn't qualify.
No, okay. She wears them.
You two are over-merged.
So, I mean, she gets these T-shirts like from the Gap or something like that, and they're like bright colors.
Yeah.
And then she wears them and wears them.
And they fade and she gives them to you?
Yeah, and then they look, I think they look really cool.
I think you look fabulous.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. You too, by the way.
Crazy cross-dresser.
Yeah, all right. But so, cross-dressing is cool.
And thank you, by the way.
Living with gay guys is cool, whether you're gay or not. What was the other thing that we... Getting married three times is... that's his business.
So what, right?
But it's the hypocritical factor that Joe was talking about. I mean, these guys present themselves as these paragons of virtue, and they're just as down and dirty as the people that they're critical
of. You got that right. You know what I think is really funny, Peter, is that people automatically assume that we like that someone would automatically assume we like Hillary we would vote for Hillary.
Actually, I dislike her intensely.
Well, you know, there's a lot to dislike, but also she, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to say anything yet. I'm not going there yet.
I was at a UAW dinner with her.
Yeah,
my wife.
I interviewed her one on one.
Did you?
I did.
Yeah.
Well, in a farmhouse in Iowa when she had her health care initiative going on. I was a news reporter at the local ABC affiliate. We had a pool between all of the TV stations, and I won it, and I got to sit there and talk to her. And you know what? She was absolutely refreshing.
Ah, well,
so there you go.
She's going to present a health plan tomorrow, and it's going to have all Americans get health insurance, except it looks so convoluted. I mean, what's really needed is a single-payer health system. We got to have socialized medicine. That was a phrase, by the way, that
here
was
we go again.
Invented by the AMA. And people go, oh, no, you know, socialized medicine, that's socialism. But like Medicare. Medicare works really well, and it works better than the private health care system. The private health care system has about 9% administrative costs. Medicare has 3%. There's less fraud in Medicare than there is in private insurance.
Right. Of course there is, because it's their money. The government.
It's no profit. So what you got to do is have this be a single payer, so you would still have your own doctor and everything like that. Everything would be the same if you have a doctor. First, one thing, everybody would get a doctor. Everybody would, you know, people wouldn't be denied the way these cutthroats operate now.
People wouldn't be choosing between paying for their monthly prescriptions or eating or... Yeah.
Well, you know,
another alternative.
I think I've said this before, but I'm struck by this all the time. I do so many, when I write public service announcement for the station, they're frequently for, you know, like walks for, I mean, what was there?
Like breast cancer,
AIDS, any.
Suicide.
Yeah, all that. And I'm, well, not suicide, because I'm talking about diseases.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, you know, the government should be funding all this research.
Suicide is kind of a disease, though, when you say mental.
You're getting as bad as I am.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And I was thinking, on one hand, when communities or either people linked by the disease, you know, somebody in their family or what have you, oftentimes there are people that actually can't afford their medical procedure and have to have like a benefit at the
New Way Bar in Ferndale. I've held a couple.
Or the comedy club.
Joey's or
Mark Ridley's.
Oh, Ridley's, right.
And on one hand, this is very good that people are coming together as a community. But on the other hand, I think this guy who's, I think had one tonight, I'm sorry to say, I can't remember his name, my apologies, but that I did a public service announcement for, I said, what the hell? Would this mean this guy wouldn't get his medical care, treatment, and meds? Probably not.
You're right.
What a sick system.
Yeah,
it
really is.
I almost said a really awful word.
Sick system.
Yeah, but I almost put an F-bomb in the middle.
Not going to happen. I've never done that in my 15-plus years on the air.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Because I'm still here.
I guess not that neither of us would be here, would we?
Yeah, but now we got the big super system. Here's the word. It's geared. It's geared. Actually, if it hears that, it's gone. All right. Peter Werby, Jalene Jordan, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
We'll be back to get your calls. Give us a call.
listening, WRIF.com.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. A number of people have been saying, Jalene Jordan, that you're way louder than I am, so I turned you down a little.
Listen, you're at the controls over there. All right, so are you rocking out?
What?
So don't.
I can barely hear you.
Yeah, see?
There you go. There. I did. I actually had you way pumped up.
Just so you know, Peter is the one at the board.
Yeah, and I screwed up.
I sit across.
And we're way pumped up about this show.
Yeah. Yes.
So we're talking about Hillary Clinton is going to unveil her health plan, which is a universal health plan. I think she's still going to keep, she's a corporatist, so she's going to still keep those folks in the loop.
Insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies, they'll all be happy.
Now, how come I can't deal, or is this still, I don't know. You know, I...
We're having some weird, slow computer problems tonight.
Well, no.
Is that it?
And now it is actually me.
Oh.
I'm afraid what's going to happen. Oh, damn it. Sorry.
All right.
Oh, sorry. How come I hit this button and the entire... letters just went off of the...
Sometimes the computer is quite unexplainable.
No, I think this is me. But in any event, I was going to... Now I have to do these by memory. Someone wrote in to say that we shouldn't use... MSM, the mainstream media, that now these right-wingers have been using that.
Co-opted it, she said.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we need to find something new. Here's one. How about come up with an... We need some ideas. What should we call the mainstream media instead? Unless, Peter, you are really stuck on saying it. And you're trying to make it, your term.
The lying corporate press?
So, LCP...
Yeah, I don't know. What did you get? You got some email. You actually
Yes, this one. Hey, Peter and Jalene, or Julian, whatever. I answer to anything but the B word. Thought I would get this email to you before. Just around 10:45 on the Emmys, some actress that won an award got censored for 4 to 5 seconds after saying something about the war. She began saying something about the war and how if the mothers ran this country, there would be no war. And then her mic was cut, and they went to a dead camera shot. Really weird. Maybe you can research it before the show. Well, we're an hour in. Just FYI, maybe see if other listeners have seen it. So if anyone has seen that or can tell us who the actress is, we would be very happy to find out. If not, I'm definitely going to be going to the Google.
Yeah, well, now, my wife told me, who was watching...
The Emmys.
She said that... all right, I got to focus. I was trying to deal with this computer thing, too. She said that the anti-Bush jokes were nonstop.
Oh, why did I not Devo this thing?
Yeah. So did you have a story there about from the American atheists or something?
Yeah. This one, you got to give me a second. Here we go.
313-298-WRI. When in doubt.
I feel like we've reversed roles here, Peter.
Yeah.
I'll find it.
Okay. Oh, all right.
It was Kathy Griffin, and here it is. Emmy Awards, Cave to Religion Police is the headline of this. An atheist civil rights group is calling for a boycott of the Emmy Awards, or called for. If official censor remarks by comedian Kathy Griffin, who I love, making light of stars who thank Jesus. This is how it went. Let's see.
Now, what is up with that? These guys are always, and women, always thanking Jesus. Like, I couldn't have done it without Jesus.
Yeah, really? I make fun of that, actually, all the time. Ms. Griffin won a Creative Arts Emmy on Saturday night. She won it last weekend. You know how they give some of the awards early, Peter?
Okay.
And for her hit program, My Life on the D-List, which I've only seen maybe one episode of because I'm not watching TV anymore, she remarked that a lot of people come up here and thank Jesus for this award. I want you to know that no one had less to do with this award than Jesus. This award is my God now. I mean, she is so funny. And so, of course, Ellen Johnson, president of American... The Roman Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights complained that Ms. Griffin's remarks were vulgar and an in-your-face brand of hate speech.
I don't get that.
Hate speech. So, very interesting. And so, good luck. They didn't get anything done. The group.
So we don't know whether or not. This is weird. Number one book. This is not what was in the paper.
What's that, Peter?
I looked at the New York Times book review section this week, and it had a list of all of the bestsellers, the non-hardcover nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to say none of them were political.
Oh.
But number one is, in, according to this, I just went on, I guess the first week on the list, Giving by Bill Clinton, Mother Teresa, Come Be My Light,
Now, wasn't there something about Mother Teresa that...
Let's not talk.
All right,
let's get back to Hillary. Hillary. And everyone was an Hillary.
What is that?
I don't know. I'm Hillary the Eighth. I am. That's the only song. You know, I've been in rock and roll all these years. And
We don't play that.
Henry the Eighth. No, they play that on one of those oldies. But Henry the Eighth is the only... somebody called in and said it was Sally Fields.
Sally, go.
Yeah. That Henry the Eighth is the only song I know all the lyrics to.
Henry the Eighth, you mean?
Well, wait a minute. In here, let's get Brian from Ypsilanti on the air. Brian, so you saw Sally Fields?
Yeah, I saw Sally Fields. It wasn't because of the anti-war. It was because she started to say GD.
Oh.
She started to do that, and they cut away, because they did that a few times during it, because a few people were dropping some language.
Well, yeah. She was a little ornery tonight, wasn't she?
Well, really worried. Everybody in broadcasting is really worried about that, you know.
So did you enjoy seeing that, that she was at least trying to speak out?
It's always fun to watch the reaction. It was a little much, though, tonight with all the anti-Bush. It was all the stuff you've heard
before. Wait a minute. How can it be a little much when we are given maybe, what is the percentage on the airwaves overall, Peter, that we're given this side?
Not very much.
Like
I forgot 2% what.
2% or something?
Yeah.
Okay, so for one show, oh, my God, thank you, Gaia.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gaia. All right, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Just real quickly, then I want to get to the calls, because I want to just bring this up. The Clinton health plan was to get health care for everyone. I don't think she's going in the wrong direction, that she's got to just take on the big health insurers and the pharmaceuticals directly, or they're going to keep robbing us for the rest of our lives.
Because Peter.
Well, you might say, okay, come on, just you're going to give us like 50 million new customers. But, our friend Roy from Placito.
Placitas, New Mexico.
Right outside of Santa Fe, sent us this. It's called The Medical Right, the Medical Right Wing, remaking medicine in their image and bragging about it. Here's a list of achievements since 2000, since Bush stole the election.
According to who?
According to this group called Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. And they got a new 70-page report on the Medical Right Wing. Pardon me. Well, did that go across the air?
No.
Good. That was coming from the top half.
Radio for two here.
Yeah, that was coming up to the top half. Don't worry. Anyway, here's what the right wing has done. This is serious.
Let's stop.
Okay. Securing broad permission for pharmacists and other healthcare providers to refuse to fill prescriptions for birth control and emergency contraception. Now, this is not like a national law, but in different places, a pharmacist, you can say, here, I want to get my birth control pills, and they'll say, sorry, it's against my religion, I'm not filling it.
In this country.
Yeah, yeah.
In your city.
Placing abstinence education in public schools in most states. Building a network of highly funded crisis pregnancy centers that reinforce the religious right political agenda. These are essentially, they pose as places where pregnant women can go. They think they're going to get an abortion, and they're actually anti-abortion.
Unbelievable.
Places.
And back on that, there I go with that damn word. Back on the abstinence, you know, really, what are these kids who are, I mean, I'm just going to say it, what are these horny kids supposed to do?
Well,
you know, you go through puberty, you get horny. What are you supposed to do?
I'll tell you, they've done these studies to show this abstinence teaching has been an absolute, total, colossal flop.
Failure.
It rivals, actually, it's worse than DARE, which has no results either, other than telling kids about drugs they've probably never heard of before.
Yeah, I know people who put that DARE sticker on their car.
They're drug dealers.
Yeah. Or I used to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I never did. Here's what also the right wing has done. Delaying the approval of non-prescription sales of emergency contraception for 3 years and still restricting sales to those over 17, thus depriving some of those who need it the most. They've also, the right wing, casting doubt about the effectiveness of condoms in preventing transmission of HIV and other sexually transmitted diseases. placing obstacles before medical research studying stem cells as an avenue to cures for a host of diseases, introducing legislation to require sonogram testing. What's that?
That's when they actually go and no. view it.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, they put the jelly fetus. And the...
Yeah. It requires sonogram testing. What the hell is that? They, you know, some of this, a few other things. Defining personhood as, quote, from the time of conception, quote, in laws and regulations, so to lay the foundation for declaring fetal life to be equal in status to that of children and adults and potentially upending abortion rights. So,
you know what? Stay out of my uterus, okay?
Yeah.
Well, stay out of it.
Yeah, and think about this. From the time of conception, I mean, that's pure Catholic theology.
Yeah.
And what does the First Amendment say, right? There shall be no establishment of religion. Hello?
What? Why? How can this get through? How can this go through? Well, we know because it's the racket, because that's our word.
Yep. Here's Matt and Taylor. Matt, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air with Peter and Jolene. Go ahead.
How you doing?
Excellent.
Actually, my question is about Hillary Clinton. If she... if she was to get elected, you know, how would she negotiate over in the Middle East? You know, they hold women in low regard. How would that work?
You know, it's who's got the money. So she could go over there and say,
she'll be fine.
We're going to give you billions. You know?
Let me ask you a question. Do you have a problem with a woman being a president?
No, not
well, I'm not. I'm kind of iffy about it, you know. I don't
is
know
it because we're that. Emotional and we'll cry? Oh no, Saddam! Oh no,
well,
Osama! Oh, what are we gonna do? You know, please, come on, come with me here, okay?
You know,
there's
actually two aspects to the anti-Hillary thing. One, she's a woman; she's too weak, and the
PMS.
Other, she's well. I don't think she's PMSing.
No,
anymore.
But you know what I'm saying. That I've
yeah.
heard men say that. What about when she gets PMS? You know, I could just strangle him.
Menopause. That's
or
what,
menopause. Yeah. yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
she's on one hand the right wing, you know, the iron bitch from hell.
Yeah.
And not the right wing. That's somebody else.
The yeah, left wing.
Yeah, the left wing iron bitch from hell.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, she's you know, kind of like too weak or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
So you know how much that. This is me off.
Here's Pete in Livonia. Pete, it's Pete and Jolene. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing this evening?
We're doing
Pete,
good.
Pete, welcome.
Hey, how you doing, Jolene? You remember me? I'm your delivery guy.
Yes, you.
Wait a minute. Are you not the guy with the Dare sticker?
No.
No, I deliver for Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh.
And he doesn't deliver the donuts to me, but he delivers the donuts while he enjoys my rock and rolling on Friday night.
Oh, yeah, I got you. Okay. Thank you for telling
me. I had a question.
Welcome.
I know it's a little off subject right now, but there are soldiers that are over in Iraq right now.
Right.
They're over there for long periods of time. Do they get any of the tax breaks? Or anything, because I have a best friend. He's a civilian contractor. If he's over there for a certain amount of time, 330 days or so, when he comes home, everything he's made is tax-free.
Really?
Yeah, I was curious if our soldiers get the same thing.
Well, I doubt it. I highly doubt it.
And also, of course, if you work for Blackwater or some, you know, one of these mercenary companies, your pay is probably six times that of an average grunt.
Well, I mean, I know what where he's working at, and I know what he's going to make, and he don't come home again until May of 09, because if he comes home before that, he loses his tax break.
Well,
for him to see his
sweet.
Well, the whole Bush deal is to, I mean, he must know. Well, there's one of two things. Either he knows this is a disaster and he's just going to pass it off to the next president and let it all go to hell. So after, you know, after January 20th, 2009, when Bush finally leaves office, if they don't steal another election or declare martial law and cancel the election, or if Bush isn't impeached like he should be for all his high crimes and misdemeanors, then that will stick a Democratic president with the war in Iraq and will take the troops out, and then probably everything will go to hell.
And then he or she will take the fall.
They'll take the fall. And also, there'll probably be a terrorist attack right after that. All right, Pete, thank you very much.
Thanks, Pete.
Yeah, I mean, here is a man who has 95% of the population, which includes Republicans, obviously, who do not believe that Bush has any capacity to end this war. And yet he's just dum-da-dum, just going along.
Yeah.
By the way, there is something that, you know, there's a lot of things that I can't even deal with. And so here, I'm a guy. Maybe I would be inappropriate to be president, right? But
hey, there's a thought.
There's something. There is.
I could go on and on.
There's an event called Arlington Midwest. Arlington, of course, being the big cemetery in outside of Washington, D.C., where the military are buried. And there is something called Arlington Midwest, the Human Cost of War. And it's put together by the Northwest Ohio Peace Coalition. It's being brought here by the Detroit Area Peace with Justice Network and Peace Action Michigan. And they're going to set up, it's a memorial of simulated tombstones with name, rank, age, and state of origin for each U.S. fallen soldier.
Wow.
And, of course, now it's getting up towards 4,000. They can't do the Iraqis, right? Or they, because this is going to be in downtown Detroit at Grand Circus Park, Woodward and Adams.
What is this, Peter?
Oh, it's going to, the opening ceremonies is coming Saturday, September 22nd at 1 p.m., and then it continues through September 26th.
Ooh, I'd really like to check that out, yeah.
Well, I don't know if I can deal with the opening ceremony. I mean, because on one hand, you know, and I have to admit this, that sometimes when I'm putting my website together and I'm listing the number of dead, it's sort of like a political act, and I'm trying to show people, look how many people have died. This is about Bush. This is how many deaths on our side he's responsible for. And all of a sudden, it occurs to me, wait a minute, every time I change that and put up 7, I put up 9, those are another dead human being.
Yeah, not just a number.
Yeah. And, of course, we have no way to chronicle the Iraqi dead, I mean, which is just now one-sixth of a Holocaust. It's starting to edge up.
I haven't heard that one yet.
Vietnam,
Peter.
Where it was 2 or 3 million, where the Korean War, where the United States forces killed 1 million civilians. And so there's a real ugly history of the United States bursting way beyond its geography, not to defend itself, but to defend what it sees as its interests. And whenever you hear our interests, what we're really talking about is our corporate interests. And it's not your and my interests, not the interests of the people that fight it. It's not the interests of the people that pay the taxes for it, you and me. It's the corporations that benefit incredibly from this worldwide empire and the war itself, because that's what a military-industrial complex is all about. And it used to be one aspect of the U.S. economy. Now it is the U.S. economy.
Yeah, and it's going to be for a very long time, folks.
Unless we do something.
Yes.
I mean, we're going to keep getting screwed. We're going to keep paying. We're going to pay our taxes, and that's going to go to Halliburton. It's not going to go to bail out Michigan. It's not going to fix things that are wrong here. It's not going to create a national health program. As we're talking about Hillary's national health program, where the hell is she going to get the money?
Right. When we're spending $750 million a day in Iraq.
Did you mean to say a day?
A day.
Yeah, it is a day, folks. It is. So it's $12 billion a month or something like that.
Wrap your head around that if you can even do it.
Yeah. A number of people, in fact, several people have called in about this, but let me, since Adam called from Oxford, let's get him on the air. Hi, you're on WRIF. You have information about the money our troops get.
Yes. Both times I was deployed to Iraq, it is tax-free. No longer how long you're over there for, it's tax-free.
Okay.
And
It's the least you're owed.
Yes. Well, just to talk a little bit about Bush, every person that enlists in the military knows that we're doing it for a reason, and we don't blame Bush. I might not agree with the war, but every one of us that are in the military has a friend or a brother or, you know, whatever it may be over there, and we want them to come home safe.
Well, so we do, too. That's the first thing we want.
Yes. That's what everybody wants. And then
with you.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And then the whole thing about Hillary, I would be terrified if she became president because of the fact of Bill Clinton.
Do you know what he's doing for the world right now? What he single-handedly, the Bill Clinton Foundation, is doing to help the AIDS situation in Africa more than anyone, more than the U.S. government will ever could even think about. He's doing good things. And you know what? So he got his earned. You know, whatever. So freaking what, okay? You know what? He does good as well. And if you go to the Bill Clinton Foundation, you can and really, really research it. He does a lot of good for a lot of people in the world.
All right, thank you very
and
much.
New Orleans.
Appreciate
thank
it,
you.
Adam. Yeah. He'd be the first man.
Yes, he was.
So when someone said,
he
you're
said
the man.
He said he's okay with that.
Yeah. Now, wait a minute. What was the deal? Now, there's two Democratic senators right now, but it was if... I don't get that. Why was so special about that? So if... Oh, I know what it was.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. No,
You're scaring me.
Yeah, it lost me for a second. Here's what would happen. Hillary gets elected president,
mm-hmm.
right?
Okay.
And so there's a vacancy. There's no longer a U.S. Senate senator from New York. Right, because she resigns because she's becoming president.
Yeah.
So the governor, Democratic Governor Spitzer, appoints Bill Clinton as senator from New York.
Oh, God. We're going to have to call him Clinton Co.
Yeah, right. That doesn't, like Bush Co.
Yeah.
That doesn't come off. Or,
no.
Yeah. All right. Here is someone whose name is not up on the screen, but he's from Harper Woods. So who's this?
My name's Ping.
What is it?
Ping, like our clubs.
Okay.
Ping, hi, Ping.
Hi, Ping. You're on the air.
I'd like to make a comment about this. I think sure. the problem is that a lot of people don't realize that you're not given very much of a choice here in America. You have the right and left hand of the same body called government.
Got that right.
You can either choose to be a Democrat. They say, which are you? Are you a Democrat or are you a Republican? Either way, they each got their hands in your pocket. If you say you're a liberal, well, then you kind of also put a certain precedence about yourself.
Yeah, you wear it proudly.
Exactly. Well, I think we need a fourth party. I think I have a solution to this. And what we need is we need a common person nominated to, I don't want to be a Republican. I don't want to be a Democrat. I'm certainly not a liberal. I'm an American.
How about an independent? Are you an independent?
I think we need a fourth party. And first of all, it doesn't need to be a corporate engineer either, not somebody out after their own pocketbook with their own personal interests. And I think the first agenda we ought to do is get rid of the Electoral College.
Absolutely.
Abolish it.
Ping, what's the third party here?
Well, the third party would be the Liberal Party, but oh. I don't see that as a viable solution. I mean,
yeah.
they're labeled as too much of a radical, just out there.
Wow, things have come to that point where liberals are considered radical.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Peter and I are I'm writing that word down, and I'm not saying it for the rest of the show. I have 40 minutes. What was the point right before that?
About a Liberal Party?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ping.
Ping, I was going to tell you that I don't know how much you've listened to Peter and I or Peter through the years, because he's been doing the show for a lot of years. But Peter and I are much more radical than liberals.
Yeah, well, but...
We fall off the spectrum, the scale. Boo!
Yeah, I don't know that I would necessarily, I mean, I would think anybody like me is going to get, I don't know. You never can tell because essentially, Ping, I'm and Jalene are what you say. We don't care about labels. We don't care. Yeah. What we care is the interests of the common person, right?
Correct. And I think that we ought to probably go to, say, Iowa, into the wheat fields and pull a farmer out of his tractor and say, how about representing this country in the best interest of the public instead of somebody that has their own personal interest?
Well, the only problem with that is the way the system is structured now is that you need tens of millions of dollars to get even in the game. I mean, think about some of the people, like, for instance, whether you agree with them or not, like Dennis Kucinich, who actually has views that represent a lot of people, but he's like in Nowheresville because he ain't got no money.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Ping. Appreciate your call. At 1 a.m. tonight, the night call show becomes the Peter Werby Show, the eponymously named show.
Nice.
Yeah. Like that means, like if a band. What band? What was the first Led Zeppelin album? Was it just called Led Zeppelin, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, that's eponymously named, right. Ann Wright, who was a former State Department diplomat and a retired 29-year Army colonel, she's going to be talking about the congressional testimony from General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker that happened Monday and Tuesday. And then I did it on Wednesday, so Bush hadn't talked yet. But, and I don't know if I'm... in a way, giving away the ending of the interview, but it may encourage you as well to listen. But as she's talking to me, she's on a cell phone outside of Nancy Pelosi's office in the congressional building, and suddenly the cops come in and start arresting people.
Really?
And, yeah, and you can hear, she starts, the police are here.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
I'm going to listen.
And then a very interesting interview following that with David Cole, who's the co-author of Less Safe, Less Free, Why America is Losing the War on Terror.
Well, very.
Yeah. All the
good timing.
Yeah. All of the information on the September 29th march on Washington right there, and underneath it, it says, make history, be part of it. Buses leaving from Detroit and all major cities. There's going to be a West Coast demonstration the same day in Los Angeles. 100,000 people were, let me see, we're into Monday already. On Saturday, we're in Washington, 100,000 people saying, troops out now. I see that their troops is spelled with a zero and a, with an O and a zero. It's all right.
Are you proofreading on the air, Peter?
I am. Sorry. Oh, yeah. Oh, are we on the air?
We have phone calls.
Sorry.
Let's go.
Yes, 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Let me see. Where is it? Let me spin the wheel here. Oh, this is going to be a great call. I can tell it's James from Westland. James, Peter, and Jolene on WRIF. Thanks for joining us.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Great,
James.
Just great.
Well, I have some comments that I think might be a little radical.
Hey.
I think you guys might enjoy it.
We would welcome that, we think.
I am personally tired of the right-wing Christians' choking grasp on our political system, on our country, on our society, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay. And I have a left-field answer for it.
Okay. Go ahead. Go on.
Marilyn Manson for president.
You know what? Al Slayer, our producer in the other room,
yeah.
I know he's agreeing with you right now.
Well, it's not just a joke either.
Oh,
because
I apologize.
Because we need a president that will listen to the people.
Right.
And Marilyn Manson's going to listen, okay.
What makes you think that Marilyn Manson... By the way, okay. There could be some squares from nowhere, as we used to say, that don't know who Marilyn Manson is.
I love his music.
Yeah. It's a he. You know, there's like Alice Cooper's a guy.
It's a Marilyn Manson. Yeah, he's into, you know, kind of gore and blood and knives and...
Gore rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he'd be a perfect president.
Okay. Wait, you know what I'm going to give you? I'm going to give you that. That was a left field... suggestion. That was very left field.
All right. Thank you very much. We will consider that, but not for long.
Okay. I'm writing that down. There.
Are you hungry, by the way?
Am I hungry?
Yeah.
I am.
Really? Okay. Well, what we got to do is go to a Justice Department little conference.
You know, I saw a little thing on that. A little thing on a big thing called a meatball.
Yeah. There's an internal Justice Department audit released on Friday showed the department spent nearly $7 million to plan, host, or send employees to 10 conferences over the last 2 years.
$7 million. 10 conferences.
Yeah.
Do the math.
Yeah. This included paying $4 per meatball at one lavish dinner and spending an average of $25 worth of snacks around to each participant at a movie-themed party.
You know
this
what?
Is all our money. Michigan can't balance its budget, and these SOBs are...
Spending $4 a meatball. That better be one big-ass meatball.
Well, right. They spent $13,000 on cookies. And here, though, let me see. There was a community-oriented policing services conference in July 2006. This is all on that lying crook under the auspices of this lying crook, Alberto Gonzalez.
Yeah, which one?
$60,000 for this conference. That was for butterfly shrimp, coconut lobster skewers, and Swedish meatballs.
I have to say, it sounds delicious, but not for that much money.
Well, you know, when these dignitaries, or actually politicians, go to Iraq, they get like lobster tortellini.
Meanwhile, the civilians can't even go to the store because they might get blown up while they're on their way there or on the way home. And the civilians won't even leave their houses after 5 o'clock.
Right.
And these guys are just having a, give me some caviar, some champagne, some lobster.
Anybody that knows these business conferences are always just scams. But, you know, they're not paying for it with their money. They're paying for it with our money.
We're paying for it, yes.
The report concluded that auditors found that using appropriated funds to pay for expensive meals and snacks at certain Department of Justice conferences, while allowable, appear to have been extravagant.
What a conclusion.
Yeah. But guess
just
this.
Gross.
The price tag for all justice conferences during the 2 years came to $81 million, but it was down from $110 million in 2003-2004.
Well, they had a war to pay for.
Yeah, well, you know, the government's a racket, and I think, you know, somebody's saying, well, what about Clinton? I'm sure you could probably go back and find that they
plenty
were
plenty of racketness there, sure. We agree.
All right. Let's see. Here is Ed. Ed is in Riverview. Thanks, Ed, for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing, Peter?
We're doing excellent.
Well, I don't know if you've been actually following the whole, like, import-type things with China and all the stuff that's been coming over here that's not up to the U.S. standards.
Okay.
But I believe that the unions and labor movement are missing a perfect propaganda opportunity.
What's that?
To say, you know, you import from China, you bring this stuff into our country, and it's not up to our standards. Here, us American workers, we're doing a good job. We're producing quality products. We work more than any other country in the world. I mean, this is the perfect opportunity, instead of getting it out of the second page news, but plastering it all over the front page, toting that U.S. products have been and always will be better than foreign products.
Well, I'll tell you, here is the problem. I may have told this story before, but I knew this woman. When you'd walk into her house, her father, who was a union president, I think he was president, I don't know, maybe keep identifying him by saying this, but he was an AFSCME president of one of the suburbs. And when he'd walk in your house, he would grab your shirt. He would grab you by your collar, and you thought, oh, he's just throwing my ass out, you know.
Checking the label?
Checking the label to make sure that your garment was made in the United States. I'm sure he doesn't do that anymore, because it's almost impossible to get, I mean, you can find it. What's the name of that? American Apparel? Isn't that a women's label?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I've never been there.
Yeah. You can find stuff. But if you go to any of the major retailers, try to find something made in the U.S., trying to find a car with, I think it's impossible to find a car with 100% U.S. content.
Yeah. And even if you wanted to make your own clothes, probably the fabric that you buy at the fabric store is made somewhere else.
Yeah. So the other problem is, oh, that our union movement, and I say our because I've been a union member forever, has been so weakened by the assault by capital on on the average working person that we just don't even have the clout. But I mean, I know it. I hear your sentiment.
And I have one more little thing.
Sure.
I don't know if you guys actually pay attention to like reading the Yahoo blobs or anything like that. I'm a news front of Yahoo.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, all this talk about how, you know, while we're over there for in Iraq for oil and everything like that, that there was a quick little blip on the Yahoo page about how they have come up with a way to actually burn salt water.
What is what? What?
Burn salt water?
Why?
Burn salt water.
What do they do with it? Why do you want to burn salt water?
What it is that, of course, everybody knows that salt water is probably the most abundant resource on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Well, what they have figured out, or somebody accidentally figured out, that if you apply a high-frequency radio wave to it, it will release the bonds of hydrogen.
Yeah.
As long as that frequency is put to it, it burns. You take the frequency away, it doesn't burn no more.
You could actually use it as a fuel?
You could actually use it as a fuel, but here's the catch.
Oh, okay, I was going to say.
Here's your catch. At the very end of the article, it said that the Defense Department and the Department of Energy were looking into seeing what uses that they could use for it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're not going to substitute like that for oil, of course. All right, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. By the way, a little earlier, I was trying to recall the phrase that Bush used in his Thursday speech. And the new slogan, the ad slogan that was devised for him by the best brains in the White House, is "Return on Success."
What? Return?
On success. In other words, that they're going to be able to reduce the number of troops there as our success grows. And, of course, people have made the point any number of times that he doesn't have much choice. I mean, so they're going to bring home, what, like 5,000 troops by Christmas? Well, they have to bring back all these troops by April or so, because they're just, their deployment runs out by then. So they really have to bring back the amount of troops would bring them back to the pre-surge number, 130,000.
Right. And also the numbers that they're trying to bring back. Those that they are bringing back are already planned to be released from Iraq in something like May. So they're coming home anyway. The ones that they're getting rid of, they're just bringing them home a little early to make it look good.
And they'd have to do something like...
It's all one big damn smoke screen.
And what are they going to do? I can't figure it. They must know that they're snookered. They're behind the eight ball, which is two different kinds
of
people.
You know what word I want to use, and I'm not going to use it?
What?
My crutch word.
Oh, unbelievable. Just unbelievable.
Not using it.
Right. Thanks to Stephen from Dearborn Heights, by the way, who wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com.
Commercials.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
All right.
Let's do this. If you want to call in the meantime, we have some open lines for you. 313. I mean, I'm thinking. I can't remember that one. 313-298-WRIF. Am I losing it? All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Just where you linger, dragging waters till the depths give up their dead. What did you expect to find? Was it something you left behind? Don't you remember anything I said when I said to fall away? Leave me to myself. To fall away and leave life laid out in my hands again. Leave life laid out in my hands, life lies
We're back
with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. This is the final segment. A lot of time to get your calls on the air. 313-298-WRIF. Remember, at the top of the hour, 1 a.m. Eastern Time, Ann Wright, former State Department diplomat and retired Army colonel. She's going to be talking about the congressional testimony of General Petraeus and Ambassador to Iraq Ryan Crocker. Also, David Cole on why the U.S. is less safe, less free, and why America is losing the war on terror. Joining me, of course, Jalene Jordan.
Hello.
How about this? Michigan Republican activist gets 5 years in prison for sexual battery. Did I send you that?
No.
Yeah. He's a lawyer who formerly led a Michigan Young Republicans organization, was sentenced to 5 years in prison on a guilty plea to sexual battery stemming from allegations that he forced sex acts. What do you mean allegations? He admitted. On a woman while both were at a Republican convention last year. Michael J. Flory, 33, of Jackson, Michigan, dressed in a jacket, white tie, and dark blue button-down shirt, was led, what is that, from courtroom in handcuffs. Other charges, including rape, kidnapping, aggravated burglary, and gross sexual imposition, were dismissed when he pleaded guilty. He's former chair of the Michigan Federation of Young Republicans. He was attending a Cleveland convention of young Republicans aged 18 to 40 at the time of the crime in July 2006. The victim, 21 years old at the time, was intoxicated and became ill, and Flory took her back to her hotel and attacked her in the hotel room.
Well, for once, at least, it was an assault on a woman.
Yeah.
A Republican,
well,
not a man.
You know,
I mean, not that I am condoning assault on anyone. You know what I'm saying. It's just this whole, bathroom closet thing.
Well, this is, typical of these Republican scandals. And again, I mean, I'm sure there's got to be Democrats. I don't think
this guy's just a bad egg.
Yeah. There's not too many.
Putting it lightly.
I don't think there's too many Democrats that do stuff like this guy did.
You know?
They're all about, these Republican conservatives are all about force. They're all about sexual repression.
Repression, that's what I was going to say. They stuff it so far down that when there's a little window of opportunity, they take it, and no matter how it is. I'm reading a book about the fear of violence right now myself.
The fear of violence?
Yeah. Or it's called The Gift of Fear, and it's all about how violence can overtake, the fear of violence can take over our lives.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, that's what Bush has manipulated everything about. Now, here, this is from Sigrid. Sigrid, who does so much to create peace and social justice, making it all happen. She said, "Hi, Peter and Jalene, don't miss the one on October 27th. It's the one. What is it?
Another march. I'm sure she's talking about.
Oh, okay. But we got to get on the peace train. There's going to be 8 regional demonstrations around the country organized by United for Peace and Justice.
Oh, you were telling me about this.
Yeah, unitedforpeace.org. And that's a network that has over 1,000 member groups strong. And what's going to happen? There's going to be a peace train that's going to leave from Royal Oak and then in Dearborn. And then it's going to go to Chicago. I'm getting on the peace train.
Nice.
You just hear Cat Stevens singing his little song, right?
Yeah, I went. There's a lot of people who've covered that, too.
Yeah. And then we'll march in this big demo in Chicago, and then we'll get back on the peace train and come back to Detroit.
Ooh, that sounds fabulous.
And you get off, it leaves at 7 a.m. What time do you get off work?
I get off at 6 a.m.
Okay.
The last time I went to the march, I got off the air at 6 a.m. here at WRIF. I was on a plane by 8:30. I was marching in front of the Lincoln Memorial at 12:30.
Oh, wow.
I marched all afternoon and went to all the events. Got on a plane the next morning at 7 a.m. and I was back in Detroit and ready to come back to do the show.
Wow.
I know. I still got it in me, Peter. And I know you do, too.
I do. We're going to get on the peace train. And you can go to my website, Peter Werby, WERBE.com. Go to the calendar page, and I've already have that listed about how you can make contact, get on the train. Come on. Well,
get on it.
I've already been setting up a poker game.
A poker game on the train?
Yeah.
Is it political poker?
No.
Okay.
It's just I'm going to win a lot of money. Here's Mike in Westland. Mike, it's Peter and Jalene. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
You see these Republicans, what are they doing? At least our Democrat has consensual sex.
Yeah, at least they just, do it.
Yeah.
They mess around with little boys and stuff like that. What's going on with these Republicans?
The power is still with Clinton. The power relationship was that wasn't good. I mean, that workplace boss and whatever. But whatever.
It was kind of hot personally.
It was absolutely. It was
kidding.
He was on the phone.
Come on, don't email me.
He was on the phone doing business.
While she was doing business?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Boy, Peter, I forgot.
Jeez Louise.
How quickly we forget those little details.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't that just seem kind of charming?
I think it sounds kind
of
hot.
And these these Republicans, one of them said, President Reagan never even took off his suit coat in the Oval Office.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's because Nancy and him.
Come on, let's move on.
They had separate beds.
Yeah. Am I still on?
Yes, you are, Mike. Go ahead.
All right.
Is this Mike still on?
Yes, this is. This is Mike in Westland.
Yeah.
All I know is that the Democratic Party, the Liberal Party, is the common sense party. That's what needs to get out. We're the common sense party. I'm sorry we want to do things like create programs like Social Security to take care of you when you get old. I'm sorry we do things like insure your money in the bank. I'm sorry we try to put money in schools for your kids. You know, they try to say we waste money. At least we want to spend the money in certain places that it needs to be, in infrastructure. All these guys want to do is spend 50 cents to every dollar that goes in Iraq, goes to Blackwater, AGS, Dynacorp, Halliburton, all these private mercenary groups that provide security for billions and billions and billions of dollars.
Now, you hear this, folks? This is, again, whenever we talk on this show, and we're talking millions or billions or what have you, we're talking about our money. What one of these right-wingers, was it Reagan or something? He's talking about the people's money. Well, the people's money is being routinely stolen, looted from the federal treasury and what should be going to help us out here in Michigan. And, in fact, you know, if it wasn't for the war in Iraq and all this money was distributed in a way that it made sense, we would be able to probably, well, I shouldn't say probably, we could have a universal health care, we could have free college tuition, we could eliminate all the slums.
Oh, here you go, Peter.
We're just getting so crazy on us here. Let's get radical.
50 cents on every dollar.
Yeah, that's absolutely amazing.
So every time the president comes in front of the American people and asks for another $150 billion, $75 billion goes to Blackwater.
Ain't that sweet. All right, thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike.
Actually, what did I say? That's amazing. That's like saying unbelievable.
Okay, we're going to write that. We're not going to use that for the next 15 minutes.
Okay. Here's David in East Point. David, it's Peter and Jolene. You're on WRIF. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Peter Werby and his most beautiful assistant, Jolene. How are you?
I'm your assistant? God, do you need me to get you some coffee, sir? Can I go get your dry cleaning?
Hey, listen, a couple of things. First
just
of all, your 30-second delay, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And also, this return on success. I wonder how many man hours and how many millions it took them to come up with this slogan.
Yeah, really. And you know what? It sounds like return on success.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
doesn't it? How dumb are they? Hey, there's our game again.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
That's our new game. Did you know that?
What?
We have a new reality show. How dumb are they?
Oh yeah, how dumb are we?
How could you forget, Peter?
Yeah.
You came up with it.
That's right. That was for whether we'll swallow all this BS that Bush is putting out. And you know what? I actually read this. Where was this? Oh, yeah. Actually, it's in one of these accounts is that people have just essentially checked out. They know that it's
screwed.
Yeah. And they feel that there's nothing we can do.
Helpless.
We voted the Dems in. That didn't do anything. We march. Well, I don't think you can give this up.
Yeah. Don't stop. Don't. And when you get frustrated, go to some type of an organization. Go to 9 Mile and Woodward in Ferndale today. Every Monday, they start right at 4:45. Peter, they gather.
Yeah. 4:45 to
get
5:45.
There if you can.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
Yeah.
Top general acknowledges Iraq mistakes. This is Marine General Peter Pace, who was the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who essentially blew out of there. He acknowledged Friday that he made mistakes in his early Iraq war strategy, but said he still has no doubt that invading the country was the right decision. Why?
Yeah. Okay.
Why?
Yeah.
What was with this guy?
You know what? Keep trying to convince us.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Well,
it's
I don't
not
know what
going to work.
Well, now it's Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
Al-Qaeda, what do they think? Has about 1,000 fighters?
I thought we said 2,000.
Well, it's
going
to 2,000.
Okay.
1 to 2,000.
I said 200.
Well, let me see.
I'm sure it's around 2,000.
Because I'm looking at this article called The Myth of Al-Qaeda.
We're over there killing millions for
Well, not, that's
two,
not exaggerated.
2,000 people?
Yeah.
Okay, a million.
Yeah.
Okay.
A million, yeah. And, well, the Sunnis now have completely turned on Al-Qaeda, and the Shiites always opposed them because often they were the targets of Al-Qaeda. And there is no way, no one really thinks when they talk about stuff, among themselves, not to us, mm-hmm. they lie to us, but no one thinks that Al-Qaeda has any capacity to take over Iraq.
Right. And you know what, Peter? Not only do the Shiites have a problem with Al-Qaeda, the Shiites have a problem with themselves. There's so much infighting.
Yeah.
There's so many different factions, so to speak. Is that the right word? Factions within the Shiites that are fighting each other. That is how completely messed up this is.
It is. Here is Mike in Birmingham. Mike, it's Peter and Jalene. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. How you doing, Peter?
Good.
And Jalene,
Mike.
Incidentally, I like that caller that called in about Marilyn Manson being president.
Yeah. What do you like?
I have my own thing to say. The Pledge of Allegiance says something about one nation under God.
Right. Yeah, that was brought in the 30s by 50s. The 50s by the is it Knights of Columbus? Yeah.
They wanted to distinguish us from the godless communists.
Yeah, I think it should be changed to one nation under Satan.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Whoa, Marilyn Manson.
We have all the heavy metal people listening tonight.
Yeah, wow.
Satan rules.
Mike, thank you. Let me see. Where are we here?
Oh, boy. Any other ideas? Come on now.
Here's Brandon. Brandon's in Farmington Hills. Go ahead. You're on the air.
All right, thanks, man. Well, I don't completely agree with that guy about Satan.
Okay.
I did. It's still kind of an old topic, the whole oil issue.
Yeah.
Driving is a privilege, right?
That's what they always tell you. But we expect it.
Well, I was in when I was taking law classes. I found out that buying gasoline is a necessity.
Absolutely, and it's now $3.20 a gallon.
Yeah, but the thing is, how can driving be a privilege if gasoline's a necessity, or the other way around?
Wow, man.
Ooh, that's deep. Let's put on some Pink Floyd.
All right, thank you. Well, that's hard on my throat.
No, but that was a very good point.
It was.
Yes, thank you.
Here's Mark in Dearborn Heights. Mark, you're on the air.
Good evening. How are you?
Very good.
Good, hi.
I want to comment first about this burning water, okay?
Oh, burning salt water. We were talking about someone was saying that there was a scientist came up with that. Yeah.
I saw the footage on the internet. This was actually a doctor who was doing cancer research, and he was trying to find out how the frequency, the electromagnetic stimulation radio waves, how they affect the cells, and he went into this accidentally, and actually I saw the footage with that water burning.
Yeah.
It's
What do you think?
Well,
he is not interesting really to pursue and make a big deal out of it. He wanted to sell that patent to whoever was willing to buy. But commit the money he gets from it into more cancer research.
Cancer research. Oh, wow.
Yes. I'll try to send you the link or the video if I find it back,
Look for it.
Okay, calltalkyes@yahoo.com.
All right, I'm going to move on because I got just a few minutes left. Thanks for the information. I'd love to see it. I appreciate you doing it.
Yeah.
Let's see,
Hello,
from Ohio. Oh, don't spell it back. Well, I guess you can spell it back.
Hi,
here's Rich. Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, I disagreed with a couple of things you were saying. I'm a conservative. And
okay, so then you're going to disagree. Okay, we established that.
Let me finish.
We are.
You said the abstinence programs wasn't working. Well, if they're not working, then what's your idea to, you know, to continue to pour money into the welfare and the food stamps?
Oh,
well, man, what year? Wait a minute, folks, this is not an archive show from the 1980s. This is
effective right now. Wait, I'm not going to say, are you serious? Because I know he is.
Well, for one thing, we're not really pouring any money into that at all. I mean, the number of poor, contrary to what, you know, what it's dropped like 0.1%.
And also, Bill Clinton wiped out the welfare system when he was in office. Come on now.
What is abstinence teaching, which is just this right-wing religious Christian agenda, which has no part of a governmental instruction program because the Constitution forbids it. What does that have to do with the fact of anything to do with welfare or food stamps?
From what I get is... You know, number one, I mean, I'm not oppressing anybody. I don't want to oppress anybody. And what a woman wants to do with her body, that's great.
Okay.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for that.
But if, you know, somebody wants to, you know, say, you know, you say to somebody, hey, you know, you shouldn't have kids before a certain age or before you're ready, you know, before you're absolutely responsible to do that, you know.
That's up to the parents.
If they don't want to take that, then don't take it. But at the same time, you know, don't cry to me saying, you know, I got four kids to feed and I'm working.
Yeah, you sound compassionate. You do sound like a compassionate conservative.
You know what? I believe that he was alluding, I honestly believe, Peter, that he was alluding to that the poor and those are who are on welfare are the ones who are the most irresponsible. How about they're the ones with the least amount of damn resources, okay? And it's up to the parents to actually, how about let's talk about sex? How about we go crazy. My parents never talked to me about sex, ever did, you know. And let's just go nuts and talk about it, everyone. You know, how it's healthy, how it's normal, how it's good, how it can be safe, how it can be less harmful, how you won't get pregnant, how you won't get a disease. I mean, wow, that's radical.
The problem is, Rich, that we're talking about $250 million failed project that the right-wing Republican Christian conservatives have foisted on the school systems to act out their far-right-wing Christian agenda that has no place in a secular society or a secular school system. And worse than that is that it's also a total flop and a waste of our money, and we got to say goodbye because our program is over. All right, thank you so much for being our last caller, and my apologies to anyone left on hold.
Please call next week.
Yeah, for sure. And in the meantime, go to my website one more time. There's all sorts of stuff that you can do, you can look at, you can learn. I learned from them. I mean, it's not me lecturing. It's stuff that I learned stuff from. I thought, oh, you might like to see
you
that.
Gather.
I gather.
You hunt and you gather.
Yes, I'm a hunter and gatherer. Yeah, that's interesting on the internet, yeah. And also a whole host of things to do, a whole calendar there. So you don't have to be a passive observer of our lives. You can make history. Jillian Jordan, thanks so much.
Turn off your TV and get out there. Thank you, Peter.
And stay tuned for the interviews.
This is WRIM.com.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. It's a pleasure to be with you. Joining me from Washington, in fact, the halls of Congress, is Ann Wright, and you're going to hear some people in the background. She'll tell you why and where she is in a second. Ann Wright is a former State Department diplomat and retired Army colonel. Among her numerous assignments, she helped reopen the U.S. Embassy in Afghanistan in 2001, but then she resigned from the State Department in protest of the Iraq invasion in March 2003. She has been part of the protests on Capitol Hill, and she's still there. Ann Wright in Washington, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Well, thank you, Peter. It's great to be with you.
Well, and I did see you here in Detroit. You were here for a big rally, actually, out in Pontiac with hundreds of people calling for an end to the Iraq War. And people usually don't associate that with former State Department diplomats or retired Army colonels, yet I think people would be surprised. There's a lot of you folks out there, aren't there?
Well, there are. There are a lot of people who have been in the government before that are horrified about what's going on with the war in Iraq, the invasion and occupation of a country that had done nothing to the United States. I myself, as you mentioned, resigned in March of 2003 in opposition to the war. I was one of three diplomats who resigned. When I resigned, I got hundreds of emails from other State Department officials saying, I wish I could resign, but I've got kids in college, I've got this, that, and the other thing, and I just can't resign. But
literally hundreds? Literally hundreds?
Yeah.
Oh.
Absolutely. I think there are 480.
Whoa.
If I remember right.
Yeah. Now, you were, now this doesn't have this here, but my memory is that you were in the United States Army for, what, 21 years?
Well, 29, 13 on active duty and 16 in the reserves.
Okay. And so this must have been quite a decision for you. And if hundreds of people said that they wish they could, and it's only Ann Wright and two others, what was so powerful that made you overcome all the personal and professional consequences that would come of this?
Well, it was I just knew that it was going to be such a horrific event for the United States, that the people of the Muslim and Arab worlds were going to be, well, and the rest of the world too, were going to be so upset with the United States for invading and occupying a country that had not attacked the United States, that it was going to create millions of people that just hated the United States, and I just did not want to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Republican administration, the Bush administration, they all told us it was going to be, their words, a cakewalk. They were going to throw roses in our paths. It would take, at the most, 3 months. What did Ann Wright know that that Rumsfeld and the rest of them didn't?
Well, they all knew it, and they were willing to risk the integrity and the really the national security of the United States on doing something that I think Rumsfeld and crew were betting on the odds that they could do this really fast, because the military of Iraq had been weakened so much by 10 years of sanctions, and they just figured this will be over fast. And and a lot of other people said, well, that won't happen that way. I mean, if you invade a country, even trying to get rid of a guy that a lot of people in the country didn't like, it's a very delicate balance of you being an occupier anywhere, even for a short period of time. Things can turn very, very quickly on you, and particularly in the Middle East, where for the United States, our intervention would be like as Bush said in the very early days, the crusade. Well, that's really what the Middle Eastern part of the world. Here come the Christians again, so to speak. You know, the crusaders coming in, and I think everybody who knew anything about the Middle East, we all knew that there was going to be a big problem.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ann Wright, when you left the State Department as a diplomat, you didn't just retire and tend your dahlias, which is always an honorable undertaking, but but rather you've been very much involved in the movement against the Iraq War, and in fact you've been involved in the protests that have swirled around the testimony of General Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker this week as we record it. We're doing at Thursday afternoon. In fact, George Bush is going to make an announcement tonight on television, which we're told he's going to say there's going to be some withdrawal of troops. Tell us about what the scene is in Washington between Monday and today, Thursday, and your role in it.
Well, I have I attended hearings, the Petraeus and Crocker hearings, both on Monday and then Tuesday. And I do respect both General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker. In fact, I had worked with Ambassador Crocker in Kabul, Afghanistan. I was part of the first team to go back into Afghanistan to reopen our embassy there in December of 2001. And then Ambassador Crocker arrived in January of 2002 and stayed for about 2.5 months as our first chief of mission. And Ryan Crocker is a very professional career diplomat who has extensive experience in the Middle East. He's gotten a real predicament, though. He is, and Petraeus is too, you know. He's been in the military for 30 years. He's a professional military person, but if you are appointed by an administration, you either you kind of go with what they want or you have to resign. And both of these guys, I think, are trying to do as good a job as could possibly be done with a terrible situation that was created by very poor analysis by senior members of the Bush administration. I think Petraeus and Crocker are trying to resolve issues, but by the United States staying in there to continue this occupation for, as Petraeus says, it'll take, you know, a couple of more years, and Crocker says pretty much the same thing on political reconciliations and economics and all that. I have a totally different view. I think that as long as the United States is there, there will not be peace in that country, and there will be turmoil and chaos, and that the best way that we can approach this is to withdraw our troops and also be working on the international scene to encourage other countries to assist if asked by the Iraqis. If the Iraqis still need training in police, in security groups, although I don't know why they need to train anybody else to shoot in Iraq. It sure seems like there are plenty of people that know how to use weapons.
Yeah, they've
got
that.
A good resource for them. But our presence there is something that is going to continue to inflame that country as long as we're there.
Now, you're much kinder, actually, to General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker than even a lot of the Democrats have been. Now, they all spoke very respectfully of them, but they virtually have been accused of cooking the books in terms of their analysis of the situation in Iraq today and the long-awaited report, which was given beginning on Monday.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, it's, you know, these are things of conscience, and I think that probably General Petraeus and Ryan Crocker had to swallow pretty hard on some of the things that they ended up saying. And I call for military and State Department people to tell the truth and to, you know, let it fall where it may. But I would appeal to both of them to really look into their consciences. And if, you know, if this is really what they feel, that's one thing. But if they have been led down the path by the administration, essentially saying, if you don't tell them what we tell you to tell them, of course your career is over. That's mm-hmm. it. So both of them have 30 years of experience. They will get a big retirement, or cut. Not, I wouldn't say big. None of the government retirements are big, but you know, of all times in their lives, this is a time to stand up for what they really believe in.
Ann Wright is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. She's a former State Department diplomat and a retired Army colonel. Before we got on the air, you said you were in outside of the office of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. What's bringing you there, and what's going on there?
Well, that's this is after getting out of jail yesterday. I was in the hearings for Petraeus and Crocker both on Monday when 8 people were arrested and 4 more were thrown out of the hearing for standing up and speaking on behalf of the people of America, 70% of whom say the war in Iraq needs to end. So many people were arrested on Monday. I thought, well, I better save a couple of people for the next day of the next set of hearings. So I piped up on Tuesday after Ambassador Crocker spoke, just to say, I'm a diplomat for peace, and you cannot have peace in a country that is occupied.
Mm-hmm.
Peace and occupation don't go along. And by that time, the police had grabbed me and escorted me out. But today we are here with a group who has had a 24-hour vigil down on the mall. They've been showing photographs of the agonies, the costs of war in Iraq, the Iraqis, the Americans, and other nationalities that have been wounded and killed in this war. And they're reading some very poignant statements that have been collected over the last 2 months, over 6,000 of them written on postcards, on a postcard that says, "We will not be silenced, and your silence is your legacy." And people are talking about holding an administration accountable, and most of them are calling for the impeachment of President Bush and Vice President Cheney. And they have now brought up, we have now brought up these volumes of postcards and are sitting in Nancy Pelosi's office to say to Nancy Pelosi that neither you nor John Conyers are the keepers of our Constitution. You cannot take parts of our Constitution away from us. And that Article 2, Section 4 of the Constitution that says we have the right to have an investigation that could lead to the impeachment of the president or vice president or elected officials for high crimes and misdemeanors, that is a part of our Constitution, and we want you to use that. And so we've come up here and we've been reading in Nancy Pelosi's office for the last 2 hours, reading those postcards.
How's she with that, or how's her staff about that?
Well, her staff has been accommodating. I mean, we are still in there after 2.5 hours, and the speaker actually has two offices. There's one for the constituents, which is over in the Cannon Building, and then her office as Speaker of the House is over in the Capitol. So she has chosen to stay over on the Capitol side while we're in her office. So we haven't seen hide nor hair of her.
Hmm.
But I would hope that her staff is, and I think they are, professional staff who will say, well, we were visited by a whole big group of people that crammed into the office for many hours and who read these books of statements from American citizens about impeachment.
Now, Speaker Pelosi in the New York Times today, Thursday, she denounced the president's approach as, quote, an insult to the intelligence of the American people. And Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, he said, after listening to the testimony about perhaps 30,000 troops being withdrawn by next summer, he says, this is unacceptable to me. It's unacceptable to the American people. So they're talking tough. Is all that, their talk, acceptable to you and others there?
Well, they can talk tough, but what we want are tough actions, and we want some actions that say the withdrawal of troops, that just gets you back to the pre-surge number. The other question to ask is how many private contractors have we bucked up now? They're anywhere between 130,000 and 150,000 contractors, which brings the U.S. presence in Iraq to over 300,000.
And, right, I need you to say that again. I need you to go through that again for people, because that's an extraordinary figure that most of us are unaware of. There's how many private, this is like Blackwater and firms like that have how many troops over there?
There are between 130,000 and 150,000 U.S. civilians as contractors there, and some of them are private security. Some are logistics people. Some do food services. All of these things are logistics support or sometimes professional security support for our military. They are taking the place of the draft. If the U.S. military had to provide those services themselves, they would have had to initiate the draft to get that volume of people. But instead, the administration in a very sly move, decided to privatize the U.S. military and has gone out and contracted at huge expense all of these services that traditionally have been provided by the military itself for itself.
And a pretty,
so really,
and at a pretty penny, too.
Oh, enormous. I mean, you talk about the contracts that have gone on with Halliburton and KBR and Parsons and all these groups. It's the U.S. pocketbook is empty.
Hmm.
But what it has done is created this 300,000 plus force that, I mean, it's a huge occupation force. It was larger than what went into Iraq in the very beginning by at least, I think, 120,000. I think the most military we ever had in there were 180,000 in April and May and June of 2003. And now we have over 300,000 that are sitting in Iraq. And it's a huge human cost. We have over 1,000 contractors that have been killed. We have 3,800, I think it's like 68 now, that are military. So we're fast approaching 5,000 Americans who have been killed in Iraq.
My guest is Ann Wright. She's a former State Department diplomat and retired Army colonel. This is the Peter Werbe Show. Now, Ann Wright, you were in the military for almost 30 years. How is it that essentially bands of irregulars can stall, can defeat the policy goals of the most powerful army in the world?
Well, they seem to be. It happens all over the world, and it's happened to the United States again. When you have when the United States invades another country, and the citizens of that country say, "We don't want you there as the invader, no matter what you say your original idea and goal was in coming into our country." When you are here as an occupier, we don't like it, and so you have and we can use low-tech ways of approaching you, and we can make it hurt for you. And that's what's happening. Small squad type of tactics being used against the biggest, mightiest military of the world. You see the use of IEDs, of explosive devices that are placed along the highways that mean that every patrol that goes out of the walls of whatever place our military is living or our diplomats are living or our contractors are living, every one of those patrols is the probabilities that they are going to see some sort of action is very, very high.
Let's do this in the time that we have remaining, because people will have had about a week to digest everything that's going on in Washington, the testimony of General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker, the protests against their testimony, the anti-war demonstration that's going to happen which happened yesterday, we're on Thursday before it, in Washington. Essentially that General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker said there's problems, but progress is being made. And when asked, are we getting out of there, they're talking about like another decade there. Some people think that the United States never has any intention of getting out because the long-term goal was military bases and control of the oil there. How do you see it, Ann Wright?
Well, originally, I just couldn't quite believe that that would be what it would be all about. But, boy, it's proving out to be that way, I believe. I mean, if you look at what the U.S. Congress agreed with the executive in May of this year, which was that they put in the supplemental, the war supplemental, that there were 18 benchmarks that the Iraqi government had to meet in order to get reconstruction funding from the United States. And one of those benchmarks was the privatization of Iraqi oil. And it under conditions that are the most that are the most different conditions than we've ever seen in the Middle East, where the government of Iraq would give up the control of its oil. Whereas in other countries of the Middle East, international oil firms can purchase lease rights for parts of profits and things like that, but you don't get full control of oil fields, which is what the U.S., first the executive, now joined by the Congress, is saying to the Iraqis, you have to do that or we're not going to give you reconstruction funding.
Mm-hmm. Now, certainly, pardon me, in Mexico and in Venezuela, these are, that's very typical of what also what's in the Middle East. These are state-owned oil operations. Now, you mentioned that this was passed, and this was passed by a Democratic Congress, and the Democrats also voted for funding of the war. And people have said now this is a war of both parties. It's a nonpartisan affair.
Well, if you look at what the Democrats are saying now, they are saying that many of them are saying that the election in 08 is more important than ending the war now. John Conyers has said that.
Right.
I mean, and we were horrified when he said it in his office when we, 47 of us, got arrested in his office about 4 or 5 weeks ago when we went in there to demand that he put impeachment on the table. And that's what he said. It is more important, the continuation of this, there's a lot of noise right around. We're having a little bit of action right here, but I'll move over to another corner.
Okay. My guest, Ann Wright, is in the offices of Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the U.S. House, as we talk. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Nothing is more important than the election, not impeaching the president or holding accountable the president of the United States, nor ending the war in Iraq. And those are two things that the mandate that the U.S. people gave in November of 2006 during that election was to end the war and to hold people accountable. And yet the Democratic Congress saying, we're not going to do it. And that's why people are furious here. We've got people flying in who've never been active before in any sort of political thing that are flying in because they say, we just can't take it anymore. We've got to do something,
mm-hmm.
finally.
Were you active politically before this, before you resigned?
No. As a U.S. government employee, I was not active at all in politics. Of course, I voted, and I had my own personal views, but as a career diplomat or military officer, you are prohibited from political work.
Well, one of the things I was getting up about, I was getting into this a little earlier with you. You went from a hierarchical, or two really hierarchical, one particularly, the Army, hierarchical organizations, very formal, very, very mainstream, kind of the center of U.S. Society, to the point where now Ann Wright is getting arrested for her sit-ins in Congress people's offices.
Well, that's right. In fact, we've got police coming in right now. I think we're about ready to have some arrests right here in Nancy Pelosi's office. Our group is going to, there are some people that said that for the symbolic reasons, they feel that they must circumscribe their own freedom for a while to make a point that impeachment is so important, like 47 of us did a couple of weeks ago. I think there'll probably be 15 or 20 that this afternoon will be arrested.
Well, I got about
nonviolent.
I got about 60 seconds left for you. Don't get arrested quite yet. Why are they arresting you? I thought you were just in her office reading statements.
Well, at a certain point, if the office staff feels that it's time for them to that they've heard all they want to hear, then they may call the police and say they'd like to have the people inside removed. And if you don't go at the directions of the police officers, then they will arrest you.
Mm-hmm. And I assume they're warning you first.
They give three warnings, and that gives anybody who's not quite sure, gives them time to clear out of the area.
I can actually hear in your voice a little. You're starting to breathe a little shallowly, that which happens when people are under stress, although you've seen this before. So I think probably most people aren't willing to take the kind of actions that you are, but there's certainly enough in our local communities. And Anne, are you with me still?
Yes, I am.
You know what? I think this might be an appropriate time to let you take care of the business there in Washington, D.C. Stay in trouble, I guess I should say to you.
We've got about 20 cops that have just shown up, so I think I'm going to have to close my cell phone up, and I'm not going to get arrested today since I did that yesterday, and I've got an outstanding case. So I will back out of this and give support to all my friends that are going to give up their freedom temporarily for our long-term civil liberty.
Thank you, Anne Wright. Thanks for being with me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you, Peter. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye now. Well, I actually have never had an ending to an interview like that. On Sunday, I'll be able to give you a live report as well, hopefully. That was Anne Wright, a former State Department diplomat and retired Army colonel. Stay tuned. Thank you very much for having joined me on the Peter Werbe Show.
This is WRIM.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. It's a pleasure to be with you. If you were listening in the last half hour, we had kind of an exciting end to our show with our guest, Ann Wright, who was in the process of perhaps being arrested at Speaker Pelosi's office in the same city, but probably under much less harrowing circumstances, is our next guest. He's David Cole. He's been called one of the country's greatest legal voices for civil liberties today by the New York Times. He's a professor of law at Georgetown University, the legal affairs correspondent for The Nation, and the author, most recently, of the American Book Award, winning Emmy Aliens. He lives in New York, in Washington, D.C. And his book that he's written with Jules Lobel is Less Safe, Less Free, Why America is Losing the War on Terror. David Cole, welcome, I think, back to the Peter Werby Show. We were trying to determine earlier. Both of us do a lot of interviews, don't we?
Exactly. But thanks for having me.
Yes. Now, with all of the chaos of the demonstrations that are going on just a few miles away, we have an opportunity here with your book to thoughtfully look at some of the same issues. And it's about the war on terror. And you say the war on terror has backfired. Now, the Bush administration says quite frequently, look, we've just celebrated the sixth anniversary of this horrendous attack on September 11, 2001, and there's been no further attacks. The Bush administration must be doing something correctly, is the argument. What say you, David Cole?
Right. Well, I always, when they make that argument, it always calls to mind for me Tom Ridge's speech when he was stepping down as the first Secretary of Homeland Security, and he said exactly that: under my watch, there have been no terrorist attacks in the United States. And then he knocked on wood on the podium. And that night, Jon Stewart had it on The Daily Show, and he said, did I just see the leader of Homeland Security for the most powerful country in the world knocking on wood? And indeed he did, and I think Tom Ridge may as well have been knocking on wood when you look at the results that the Bush administration's preventive paradigm, war on terror, has produced. It's very difficult to connect the zero terrorist attacks here to the measures that they have taken. So just to give you one example, in the first 2 years after 9/11, the government admitted to putting into preventive detention over 5,000 foreign nationals in anti-terrorism measures, virtually all of them Arab or Muslim, over 5,000. Of those 5,000, exactly zero stand convicted of any terrorist offense today. They sought out 8,000 young men for FBI interviews simply because they came from Arab or Muslim countries. Again, on the theory, well, we might find a terrorist. None of those 8,000 stand convicted of a terrorist offense. And they called in 80,000 for special registration, fingerprinting, photographing, interviewing by the INS, again, simply because they were males from Arab and Muslim countries. None of them stand convicted of a terrorist offense. So in this, what is really the most extensive campaign of ethnic profiling since World War II by the federal government, the government's record is zero for 93,000. And rounding up 93,000 people who have nothing to do with terrorism does not stop any terrorist attack from occurring.
Now, well, let me be the devil's advocate here. Many of our listeners think I am in any event, but maybe that did it. Maybe the fact they said, look, we've got our eye on you. This is the ultimate panopticon. We're everywhere. That you make a move and you don't even make a move and we call you in. That it may have been this preventative paradigm that that the Justice Department, Ashcroft, the head of the Justice Department, said would work. Maybe we should give them credit.
Yeah, but and it may also have been that the moon was in the region of Sagittarius or something. I mean, it could be anything, right? If you're trying to explain something that hasn't happened, you could put forward all sorts of speculative suggestions. But the idea of rounding up 93,000 people in the aftermath of 9/11 was there must be a terrorist here somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And if you come up with entirely empty-handed, that suggests that maybe there wasn't a terrorist there. And the same thing is true with their criminal record. They boast that they've indicted over 400 people in terrorism-related cases and had over 200 convictions in those cases. But what it turns out that the key word there is related, because the vast majority of these cases have no terrorist charge in them whatsoever, are routine check fraud charges or filling out a federal form falsely or credit card fraud or lying to an FBI agent. They have nothing, they have no terrorism charge in them whatsoever. And in fact, the Inspector General of the Justice Department issued a study earlier this year criticizing the Justice Department for inflating these figures and listing cases that had nothing to do with terrorism as if they were terrorism related. The New York Times and Washington Post looked at all the cases and found only 39 convictions that had any terrorism charge in them. And then we, for our book, looked at those 39, and what you find is that virtually all of them are under this very broad statute called the Material Support Statute that allows the government to get a conviction against someone without showing that he ever engaged in a terrorist act, ever conspired to engage in a terrorist act, ever sought to aid or abet a terrorist act. All they have to show is that the person had some link to some group that we put on a blacklist and labeled terrorist. And it doesn't matter whether the individual's activity is perfectly innocuous or horribly horrific. And so at the end of the day, there has actually been one person in the United States since 9/11 who's been convicted of an attempted terrorist activity, and that was Richard Reid, the shoe bomber, who was not captured by any brilliant Bush strategy, but by an alert airline attendant who saw this strange-looking guy trying to light his shoe.
And now we all have to take our shoes off when we fly. David Cole, tell me, though, it seems like every other day we read in the newspaper that another group of people with Muslim names have been convicted of terrorism.
Well, in fact, no. We see stories about indictments. We see press conferences held when the government indicts someone. But what we don't often read are the stories when these cases fall apart and the government accepts a guilty plea to a very minor offense, or it drops the terrorist charges, or drops the case altogether, or the people are acquitted. So, the government's success rate, the federal government's success rate in terrorism prosecution since 9/11, is 29%. As that's compared to their success rate in general federal felony cases, which is 92%. So generally in criminal cases, the federal government does not lose. And yet in the criminal cases, in the terrorism cases, they're losing more than two-thirds of the time. And that's because of this preventive paradigm. They're going in too early. They're picking people up before they've developed evidence about them, not based on evidence that they've done something wrong or even are planning to do something wrong, but based on fear and speculation that they might do something wrong in the future, often that fear and speculation based on religious and ethnic background and very little more, and that's why they lose a lot of these cases.
Mm-hmm. In your book, Less Safe, Less Free, you mentioned the Detroit case, and that's kind of gone down the memory hole of most of us here in the Detroit area. Could you refresh our memories about that?
Well, this was the first post 9/11 terrorism prosecution, and they indicted four individuals and charged them with providing material support to terrorism. They never specified what the specific terrorist act was that they were allegedly providing material support to, but they had some sort of sketches that they claimed were sketches of a target, etc. And they actually obtained convictions against two of the individuals on terrorism charges, and the other two were acquitted on terrorism charges, and one was convicted on a minor immigration charge or something. But about a year later, it came out that the government's central witness in the case had admitted to a cellmate that he lied on the stand, and that the government prosecutor knew that his witness had admitted to lying on the stand, and he never turned that information over to the defense, which you are absolutely required to do by the Constitution. And so ultimately the government, the court threw out the convictions, and the government actually turned around and prosecuted the prosecutor. Notwithstanding that is still one of the cases, that the government's website, www.lifeandliberty.gov, cites as one of its successes in the war on terrorism. They broke up a terror cell in Detroit. They don't say, but actually it turned out to be all based on a lie, and it was thrown out, and there were no convictions.
Mm-hmm. David Cole is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He's the co-author with Jules Lobel of Less Safe, Less Free, Why America is Losing the War on Terror. More on the book at lesssafelessfree.net. And also, I'll have a link on my site as well. Now, there seems to be, you know, overreacting to utilizing ethnic profiling, a lot of incompetence and boasting that's not deserved, but that's not really the title of your book. It says we're less safe.
Right, right. And it's, so part of the case is basically to look at the claims of victory and of success that the Bush administration has made, and to show that, in fact, when you peel away the onion, there's very little there. But the second part of it is it's not just that we haven't actually captured many real terrorists or brought people to justice, but it's that we have, by the choices we have made, we have hurt ourselves in the long run in a variety of ways. One is that we authorized the use of coercive interrogation and torture to get information out of people. And we did get information. Some of it might be reliable, some of it might not be reliable. But what we know about that information is that they're never going to be able to use that information to hold anyone accountable. And so when you waterboard Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, which we did, you make it very difficult to then bring Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the alleged mastermind of 9/11, to justice for his crimes. And so he's sitting in detention in Guantanamo, and we don't know what to do with him. We can't try him because the trial will turn into a trial of the United States tactics. But the world is you know, increasingly saying you can't just hold him forever without trying him. And we painted ourselves into that corner by using tactics that are illegal under every civilized system of justice around the world. And so that's one way. And the other way, of course, that we have undermined our security in the long term is that we have, by our actions, promoted this incredible rise in anti-Americanism. On September 11th, 2001, we had the world's sympathy. We have squandered that sympathy, and we have watched as anti-Americanism has risen to heights that we've never seen before in the history of this country. And that is critical because the way you win the way you defeat a terrorist organization is you have to isolate it from its community. And when you are seen as taking illegitimate actions, as targeting people for simply being Arab or Muslim without any other basis for suspicion, as justifying torture and cruel and human and degrading treatment of Arab and Muslim human beings, you drive those people in the community to be sympathetic to al-Qaeda, to be supportive of al-Qaeda, or even to look the other way when al-Qaeda is operating, instead of driving them away from al-Qaeda towards us. If we had responded in a way that was consistent with the rule of law, then I think we wouldn't have had this rise in anti-Americanism. It's amazing that we were a victim of the worst terrorist act the world has ever seen, and yet 6 years later, we've never been more reviled around the world.
Well, David Cole, as you, I'm sure, know, that here in the Detroit area is the largest concentration of Middle Eastern people, ancestral and immigrants outside of the Middle East, about 300,000. And it's always been surprising to me, given, what you just said, that there's not at least 0.01%, which I think I was trying to do the math, which is at least, you know, there's going to be like 30 people, 30 young men that are so enraged at what's going on by the Bush administration. Administration at Guantanamo and the roundups here and the war itself that haven't done anything. No one has. Are we way over exaggerating, in your estimation, the threat from Muslim people? I'm not sure. You know, that's a broad swath of folks that we're talking about, people in the Detroit area, people around the world. I mean, is there an enormous threat from al-Qaeda and terrorism? Or, I mean, when they do things, I mean, they do spectacular damage, as we've seen here and in London and Madrid. So we know that even a handful of determined men can wreak havoc.
Right, and that's one of the perils of the modern world. Of course, we have created
the technology that gives small groups of people the power to do tremendous harm. And so even if it is a relatively small number of people, it is a serious threat if they're willing to inflict those kinds of casualties. And Al-Qaeda, I think, has, you know, shown that beyond any doubt that it is willing. So, but I think, you know, that you have seen now 6 years of incredibly intense surveillance and targeting of the Arab and Muslim community in the United States, and yet the government has not yet identified a single Al-Qaeda cell in this country. And I think what that suggests is that, you know, no, our community, our Arab and Muslim communities don't appear to pose a particular threat. And in other Western countries and in Europe, there are much more considerable homegrown problems. But those, the Muslim immigrant communities in say England or France or Germany are quite different from the communities here. Ours are relatively professional, more on the mean, much more highly educated than the average American. Earn much more than the average American. They are, you know, middle class, upper middle class, and well integrated into the mainstream status quo.
And they're also from the Middle East. Most of the immigrants in, like for instance, in Spain and in Spain, they're from North Africa and
England,
France,
Pakistan,
and England. Yeah,
from South, right. Yeah. And they're often much poorer, much more working class, many fewer opportunities. Much less integrated into the general community, and so they've had much much more greater problems than we have. But you know, I think when we take actions against our own community and against members of our own community because they're Arab or Muslim, or when we argue we can, you know, inflict cruel and human degrading treatment on people because they're foreign nationals, the audience for that is not just our own communities, but it's the international audience. And when other countries and communities, Arab and Muslim communities in other countries, see the United States treating their countrymen as less than human, as denying them basic human rights, that I think does tremendous damage to our ability to get the cooperation we need, our ability to win the war of ideas, and of course gives an incredible gift to Al-Qaeda in terms of its recruitment. I mean, if they had hired the best minds that Madison Avenue could provide and asked them for an advertising campaign, they never could have come up with anything as good as Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo.
David Cole is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He's a co-author of Less Safe, Less Free, Why America is Losing the War on Terror. And you say we're less free. Any insight into the motivation of the Bush administration? Was it just a panic response of saying, look, we've got to stop these guys no matter what tactics we use? Or is this part and parcel of trying to install a imperial presidency, unitary executive that can essentially do whatever they want?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both, and I think there are different people in the administration with very different motives. I think most of the people in the administration are acting out of good motives. There's tremendous pressure after an attack, any kind of terrorist attack, but certainly an attack like 9/11, to do whatever, you know, you can to make the country safe. And I think that pressure would have been felt whether we had a Democrat or a Republican, and we would have seen overreaction whoever was in office. It's unfortunate, but that's, you know, it's been our history, and it's been the history of most countries. And the question really is, you know, can you correct it? Can you put in checks and balances and the like? I think that's one point one. But point two is, this is an administration that had in very high places people who had a particular ideological commitment to restoring a kind of unchecked executive power, and Vice President Dick Cheney being the principal one, and his counsel, David Addington, playing a central role in pushing a lot of these very extreme positions, most of which they've been beaten down on, either by Congress or by the courts or by public opinion or by world opinion. So I think, you know, in some sense we had the worst of both worlds. We had incredible pressures that would have led almost any government to engage in abusive acts, but we also had a government that didn't particularly wasn't particularly sensitive to civil liberties issues and was particularly interested in aggressive executive power.
David Cole, you mentioned what happened after 9/11 as being the biggest. Assault on civil liberties, did you say, or the biggest roundup of people since World War II, or both?
Well, I see. Yeah, the campaign of detaining people, singling people out for interviewing, calling people in for registration simply because they come from Arab or Muslim countries. I think that is, it can be analogized to the Japanese internment. It's not as bad as interning 110,000 people simply because of their ethnic ancestry, but we are still acting on the basis of ethnicity, religion, and nothing else.
Mm-hmm. And I was going, as you said, this happens frequently during wartime in World War I, where thousands of socialists and labor leaders and people that objected to World War I were imprisoned under pretty bad laws.
Yep.
As well. You mentioned Guantanamo. And that was where the worst of the worst were. And what's the status there now of these men? And did they turn out to be the worst of the worst?
Right. Well, Guantanamo is a kind of a case study for the entire debacle, I think, because we were told they're the worst of the worst. These are the kind of people who would chew the cables on their transport plane to bring it down if they weren't tied down themselves. That's what the Joint Chiefs of Staff had told the world. They were so bad that we didn't have to give them any hearings whatsoever because we were so sure that they were all bad guys. And we couldn't possibly let any of them go because they would, turn around and attack us again. Well, what do we know now? We know now that 435 of the people at Guantanamo, more than half, have been released. If they were the worst of the worst, why did we release them?
Mm-hmm.
We know now when the Supreme Court said that, law does apply at Guantanamo. It's not a law-free zone, and the administration was forced to give these people hearings. We then look at the results of these hearings, and many people have criticized the hearings as essentially kangaroo courts. But notwithstanding their deficiencies, their results are pretty startling. The military tribunals that held hearings on the status of these people, who they are, categorized only 8% of them as fighters for al-Qaeda or the Taliban, 8%. So 92% of the people there, the government's own military tribunals say, are not fighters for either al-Qaeda or the Taliban. So, the thing about it is, the tragedy is that it was entirely unnecessary. Guantanamo has become such an embarrassment that even President Bush and Condi Rice say, it needs to be shut down. They just can't figure out what to do with the people there. But the tragedy is, we didn't need to go there. Had we abided by three simple principles, I don't think Guantanamo would be the black mark on America's reputation it is today. The reason is that when you're fighting a military conflict, it is not unheard of. It is a totally routine to detain people who are fighting against you. That's, countries at war do that all the time, and no country says that that's illegitimate. But you got to follow three basic principles when you do that. You have to give them a hearing to make sure you're actually holding someone who's a fighter and not someone who was turned in for to get a reward and is innocent. Number two, you've got to treat them humanely. You can't torture them, subject them to coercive interrogation and the like. Number three, you can only hold them for the duration of the particular conflict with that particular country or group. The Bush administration said, we're not going to give them any hearings. In fact, we're not even going to tell you who they are. The world has to just take our word for it. They're bad guys. We're going to use coercive interrogation tactics to get information out of them, up to and including, making them strip naked, making them wear women's underwear, attacking them with dogs, injecting them with IV fluids until they urinate on themselves, and the like, all documented by the military's own accounts of interrogation logs. And we said we can hold them not until the conflict with Al-Qaeda is over or the conflict with the Taliban is over, but as long as the war on terror lasts. And the war on terror, you know, terrorism is never going to go away. That's a permanent state of affairs.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. There's so much more in the book, Less Safe, Less Free, Why America is Losing the War on Terror. Mary Robinson, the former president of Ireland and the United Nations Commissioner for Human Rights, says this is a compelling and lucid case that human rights and the rule of law are not only fundamental to democracy, but are its strongest weapons. Having joined me on the Peter Werby Show, David Cole, who's co-author with Jules LaBelle of the book. It's available from the New Press. You can go to lesssafelessfree.net, and I'll have a link on my site as well, Peter Werby, WERBE.com. David Cole, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much.
Weekday night at 10 with Meltdown. It's like getting hit in the head by a 2x4 with a nail in it. Mandatory Metallica. Now, it's your triple play of the mighty Metallica with a big unit every Weekday night at 10. Exclusively from your one and only Metallica station. 101 WRIM. Everything that rocks.
This is WRIM.com.
Grandpa's old radio. Oh, wouldn't it be grand to gather around and have a listen?
Well, turn something on. I'm starting to think.
A date which will live in infamy.
Good evening, adults. We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a very special presentation.
Boring. Go back to that infamy guy.
101 FM, WRIF Detroit. How's it going? It's Slayer, Alan Beck, stepping in after Peter Ruby and Julian Jordan Night Call right here exclusively on 101 WRIF. This is The Riff, Riff Rock and Roll Radio, coming your way all night long with me, Alan Beck, up till 5:30 a.m. when Mark and Mike take over for the Drew and Mike in the Morning Show right here on The Riff. Coming up just this hour, we got some Ozzy on the way. Also, the new Serge Tankian track, the guy, the frontman from System of a Down. His new solo track is coming up in just a few minutes. Also, the new one from The Cult, which is, believe it or not, pretty damn good. Also, some Def Leppard, Evans Blue, Nirvana. We've got it all right here on The Riff. Also, come on, let's give it up for the Lions.